Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is the 16th of the second month, 2026, and it is 2 minutes past the hour of nine. Ladies and gentlemen, what we are doing tonight is working on the money. We're working on the money because we have to work on the money, guys. I don't know now. We are working on the money because the money is critical. It is needed. It is wanted. It is vital. It is vital for us to be connecting with the money. It is vital for us to know exactly where the money is coming from, where it's going, what it's doing. You know, money is most our best friend. And even if you don't want to admit it, even if you don't want to say the truth, it is the truth. Money is... The poor person says money is the root of all evil, but I say the money, follow the money. But before that, ladies and gentlemen, just hold that thought.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida, ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Akupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Akukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The University of Namibia is pleased to announce the continuation of the UNAM readiness program in 2026 for equitable access to higher education. The program is specifically designed for prospective students aiming to enroll in UNAM undergraduate qualifications, excluding professionally regulated programs. The readiness program is intended for learners who have done NSSCAS, NSSCO, and NSSCH or HIGCSE or equivalent, but do not meet the minimum UNAM admission requirements. Applications are completed online via the UNAM website www.unam.edu.na online applications. Prospective students are encouraged to apply by the 20th of February 2026 and consult the official UNAM platforms for admission requirements. Thank you very much.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen. So we're talking money today. We're talking money. And who is better, to talk money if not those that know the rules of money? So today we're going to be talking about the 24 rules of money. Now, the reason that we're talking about this is because we also want to know. We also want to know, how are we going to get this money in 2026? Ne? And it's not really how to get rich, ne? It's just to be stable, man. It's to be stable, to kill a mockingbird. It's to stabilize, it's to find ourselves somewhere, somehow. And then also just work on our money and work on our plans and see exactly how far we can possibly go if that is the case. So ladies and gentlemen, we are doing our reading corner again, because that's all I want you guys to do this year. I want you guys to get as much information as possible. And also, if I am going to be the one that is leading you to the promised land, then so be it. So we're going to start with our 24 rules of money, and we're going to take it from there. Now, there is also another subtitle or another, the sentence doesn't end there, right? But I don't want you guys to actually take it up. I don't want you guys to be like, well, like how to get rich and that. Like, we're not doing that. We're just doing the 24 rules of money. We're supposed to learn the 24 rules of money so that we can understand the 24 rules of money. And if we can understand the 24 rules of money, then maybe our pockets will be fat and our bellies will be fed and our children's bellies will be fed and everything. Because I think that many of us are working very hard and many of us are pushing and we are pushing and we are pushing and we are pushing. Now the problem is that the body's name, I think a lot of us started pushing a little bit too late when the bodies were also already on the way to becoming old, because we wasted our youths chilling, drinking and having fun and all of that. And now we are in this position, but it's never too late. As long as we're out here, we always have a chance. But before that, ladies and gentlemen, we as Eagle Media House do not claim any ownership of any, material that we play during Pulling Heartstrings. It's strictly for, in the newspaper world, they call it for illustration purposes, and we will do the same. We will call it for audio purposes or for teaching purposes, for wisdom purposes. It is strictly for learning. We are not claiming any ownership of it. We are not saying it is our work. We are not saying it's our book. We are not saying it's our thing. We are saying that, hey, I, the matriarch, stumbled upon something that was quite interesting and fascinating, and I wanted to share it with you. So if you would like to call in, if anything tickles your brain and you would like to speak about it, the number in studio is 083-288-401. I'm out here and I'm waiting for your call. And I'm also listening, and we can always have a conversation. It's beautiful to have conversations about things that really do affect us in one way or another. And I think that it's time for us to have the conversation around money, and not just a conversation around money and love. We're talking about the conversation of money only, please. Only. So without further ado, welcome.
24 Rules of Money. How to Be So Rich, Never Be Poor Again. Written and published by Ngas Life. They lied to you. They told you to go to school, get good grades, find a stable job, and you'd be fine. They said work hard and money will follow. They promised that if you just kept your head down and did what you were told, prosperity would find you. But here you are. Maybe you're working harder than ever, but your bank account doesn't show it. Maybe you're making decent money, but it slips through your fingers like water. Maybe you're tired of living paycheck to paycheck, tired of saying, I can't afford it, tired of watching others succeed while you stay stuck. Here's the truth nobody tells you. Money isn't about working harder. It's about knowing the rules. Think about it. Why do some people seem to attract money effortlessly, while others struggle their entire lives? Why do some businesses explode while others fail in the first year? Why do some people retire at 40 while others can't retire at 70? It's not luck. It's not talent. It's not even about where you started. It's about understanding how money actually works. Money follows rules, principles that govern success and failure, wealth and poverty, progress and stagnation. These rules don't care about your background, your education, or your current situation. They work for anyone who understands them and applies them. Rich people know these rules, successful people follow them, and now you're about to learn them. Rule 1. Solving problems. Money doesn't care about how hard you work. Money doesn't care about how many hours you put in, or how tired you are at the end of the day. Money only cares about one thing, problem solved. This is the rule most people never understand. They think if they just work harder, stay longer, do more, the money will come. So they hustle, they grind, they sacrifice their time, their health, their relationships, and they wonder why they're still broke. Here's why. They're confusing effort with value. You don't get paid for working hard. You get paid for solving problems that people care about. The bigger the problem, the more people who have it, the more valuable the solution, the more money flows to you. Think about a doctor. Are they paid for the hours they work? Number. They're paid because they solve a critical problem, sickness. People will pay almost anything to feel better, to save their lives, to protect their families. The problem is huge, so the payment is huge. Now think about someone digging a ditch in their backyard. They might work just as hard as that doctor, sweat just as much, get just as tired, but nobody pays them anything because they're not solving a problem that anyone else cares about. This is the difference between being busy and being valuable. Look around you right now. Every dollar that changes hands is solving a problem. Your morning coffee solves the problem of being tired. Your phone solves the problem of staying connected. Your car solves the problem of getting places. Netflix solves the problem of boredom. Every product, every service, every business exists because it solves a problem someone is willing to pay for. So if you want more money, stop asking, "How can I work harder?" and start asking, "What problems can I solve?" The people making real money aren't necessarily working harder than you. They're solving bigger problems. They're solving problems for more people. They're solving problems that people desperately want.
E filosisho o talikula ndulako na vewa yuk. E kwashili palekolo maruendo paiwano kupitila mo NHP. O atupateleko mesho kwashili palekolo asfika mafio $5 e miliona omlongo danamibia. Moshi joshe tukeshe kuyanja o makwafo unamiti e nashane filosisho lopa ulumo mumbu. Kwa avoveli ponje yoshilongo, shijoshi topor washo ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe bianando ishoshe layash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis maule o minute dishona elela, lishangifako nhp.com.na o manga ino ya moruendo. Ponje yoshilongo e mangono malandula fano o dodino kulandurwa NHP rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Solved. And here's the beautiful part. You don't need to invent something revolutionary. You don't need a genius idea. Most wealth is built by solving ordinary problems in slightly better ways. Faster delivery, better customer service, clearer communication, more convenience, less hassle. Your job isn't to work yourself to death. Your job is to find problems worth solving and solve them better than anyone else. When you shift your focus from hours worked to problems solved, everything changes. You stop trading time for money and start trading value for money. And value scales in ways that time never can. The question that changes everything, what problem do people have that I can solve better than anyone else? Answer that question, and the money will follow. Rule 2. Patience. Everyone wants money now. They want the big house now, the nice car now, the vacation now, the lifestyle now. And because they want it all right now, they stay broke forever. This is the trap that keeps most people poor. They can't wait. They see something they want, and they buy it immediately. They get a raise and instantly upgrade their lifestyle. They have a little extra money, and it burns a hole in their pocket until it's gone. They're always spending today's money on today's wants, leaving nothing for tomorrow's wealth. Meanwhile, wealthy people do the opposite. They wait, they delay, they sacrifice today so they can have everything tomorrow. This is the rule of patience. Wait now, win later. Think about planting a tree. You dig a hole, plant a seed, water it, and then what? Nothing happens. Days pass, weeks pass, months pass. It looks like you wasted your time. Your neighbor who bought a plastic tree has shade right now while you're still staring at dirt. But you keep watering. You keep waiting. And then, one day, a sprout appears. Then a sapling. Then a small tree. And 20 years later, you're sitting under massive branches with fruit hanging down while your neighbor's plastic tree is cracked and faded in a landfill somewhere. That's how money works. Every dollar you don't spend today is a seed. Plant it. Let it grow. Stop digging it up to see if it's growing. Stop spending it because you're impatient. Just wait. The person who buys a new car every few years will always have car payments. The person who drives a used car for 10 years and invests the difference will eventually pay cash for any car they want and still have money left over. The person who needs the latest phone, the newest clothes, the trendiest restaurants is always chasing the next thing, always broke, always stressed. The person who waits, who lives below their means, who delays gratification, builds wealth that compounds and grows, and eventually gives them more freedom than any purchase ever could. Here's what nobody tells you. Being broke is expensive. When you have no savings, every emergency becomes a crisis. A broken car means debt. A medical bill means panic. You end up paying interest, fees, and penalties because you couldn't wait. You're always desperate, always paying more, always stuck. But when you can wait, when you have patience, everything gets cheaper. You can wait for sales. You can pay cash and negotiate. You can avoid interest and fees. You can make decisions based on what's smart, not what's urgent. Patience isn't just about saving money. It's about building a position of power. The person who can wait has options. They don't have to take the first job offer. They don't have to sell their investments during a downturn. They don't have to make desperate decisions. They can afford to be strategic because time is on their side. This is why the rich get richer. Not because they're smarter or luckier, but because they can afford to be patient. They can let investments grow. They can wait for the right opportunities. They can play the long game while everyone else is scrambling for quick wins. You want to know the secret to building wealth? It's boring. It's waiting. It's saying no to things you want today, so you can say yes to everything you want tomorrow. It's eating at home instead of going out. It's driving your paid-off car another year. It's skipping the vacation this year to invest the money. It's not upgrading your phone. It's wearing last season's clothes. It's being invisible today so you can be unstoppable tomorrow. Most people can't do this. They see their friends buying things and they feel left behind. They see something on sale and convince themselves they're saving money by spending it. They mistake spending for success and wonder why they never get ahead. But you're different now. You know the rule. Wait now, win later. The question to ask yourself every time you want to buy something. Would I rather have this thing today, or would I rather have freedom tomorrow? Choose freedom. Choose patience. Choose wealth. Rule 3. Small steps. People look at millionaires and think they did something massive, something dramatic, one big move that changed everything. So they wait for their big break, their lucky moment, their million-dollar idea. And while they're waiting, they do nothing. Here's the truth. Wealth isn't built in one big leap. It's built in 1,000 tiny steps, small actions, repeated consistently, that don't look like much at first, but compound into something incredible over time. This is the rule of small steps. Little things add up to big things. If you save $10 today, you're not rich. If you save $10 tomorrow, nothing changes. If you save $10 every single day for a year, you have $3,650. Do it for 10 years, and you have $36,500. Add some growth and compound interest, and suddenly you're looking at real money. But most people never start because $10 doesn't feel significant. It doesn't feel like it matters, so they spend it on coffee, on snacks, on nothing, and wonder why they never have anything saved. They don't understand that small steps aren't just about the money. They're about building the habit, building the discipline, building the identity of someone who saves, who invests, who makes smart choices. Think about your health. You don't get fit by working out one time. You don't get healthy by eating one salad. You get there through small daily choices that add up over months and years. Skip the extra serving. Take the stairs. Walk for 20 minutes. Each action is tiny, but together they transform your body. Money works the same way. Read one page about investing every day, and in a year, you'll know more than 90% of people. Learn one new skill every month, and in 5 years, you'll be extraordinarily valuable. Make one small improvement to your work every week, and in a year, you'll be the best at what you do. The problem is that small steps feel insignificant. They don't give you instant results. They don't impress anyone. They're boring, so people skip them and look for shortcuts. They want the diet pill instead of the daily walk. They want the lottery ticket instead of the daily savings. They want the get-rich-quick scheme instead of the slow, steady build. And they stay exactly where they are. Meanwhile, the person taking small steps every day is moving forward, slowly, quietly, without drama or fanfare. But they're moving. And movement, no matter how small, beats standing still. Here's what makes small steps powerful. They're easy to do, and they're easy to sustain. You can't save $5,000 today, but you can save $10. You can't become an expert overnight, but you can learn something new today. You can't transform your income in a week, but you can make one improvement right now. Small steps remove the excuse. You can't say you don't have time for 10 minutes. You can't say you can't afford $10. You can't say it's too hard to read one page. Small steps are accessible to everyone, which means everyone can start building wealth today. And here's the magic. Small steps compound. That $10 saved doesn't just sit there. It earns interest. That interest earns interest. That knowledge you gained opens new opportunities. Those opportunities lead to more income. That income creates more options. Everything builds on everything else. This is how ordinary people become wealthy. Not through luck or genius or inheritance. Through small, consistent actions that compound over time into extraordinary results. Start where you are. Do what you can. Don't wait for perfect conditions or the perfect moment or the perfect plan. Just take one small step today, then take another tomorrow, and another the next day. In 6 months, you'll be amazed at how far you've come. In 5 years, you'll be unrecognizable. In 20 years, you'll be wealthy. But only if you start today. Only if you take the small step that's right in front of you. The small step to take today, save $1. Learn one thing, make one improvement, just one. Then do it again tomorrow. Rule 4. Many sources. Most people have one source of income. Their job, one paycheck, one employer, one stream of money flowing into their life, and they think that's normal, that's safe, that's how it's supposed to be. Then the company has layoffs, or the business shuts down, or they get fired, or they get sick and can't work. And suddenly, that one stream stops flowing, and everything falls apart. This is the rule most people learn too late. Never depend on a single source. Think about a table with one leg. It doesn't matter how strong that leg is. One good push, and the whole thing tips over. But a table with 4 legs? You can remove one, and it still stands. Remove 2, and it's wobbly, but functional. That's the difference between fragile and stable. Your income needs multiple legs. The wealthy understand this instinctively. They don't have one source of money. They have 5, 10, 20 different streams flowing in. Some big, some small, but all working together to create stability and abundance. They have their business. They have rental properties. They have investments that pay dividends. They have royalties from books or patents or licensing deals. They have side projects. They have consulting income. They have assets working for them 24 hours a day, even while they sleep. If one stream dries up, they barely notice. The others keep flowing. They're protected. They're secure. They're free. But here's what stops most people from building multiple income streams. They think it's too complicated. They think they don't have time. They think they need to be an expert in everything, so they stick with their one job and hope nothing goes wrong. The truth is simpler than you think. You don't need 10 businesses. You don't need to be working 80 hours a week. You just need to start building one additional stream at a time. Maybe you have a skill you can freelance on weekends. Maybe you have a spare room you can rent out. Maybe you can buy one dividend-paying stock that sends you money every quarter. Maybe you can create something once that earns money repeatedly, like a digital product or online course. Each stream starts small. Maybe it's only $20 a month at first. That's fine. It's not about the amount. It's about having something separate from your job, something that proves you can create money in more than one way. Then you add another stream. And another. Over time, those small streams grow. Some fail, and you replace them. Some explode and become bigger than your job. But together, they create something your job never can. Security and freedom. Here's what changes when you have multiple income streams. You stop being desperate. You can negotiate better at your job because you're not terrified of losing it. You can take risks because you have backup. You can walk away from bad situations because you have options. You stop living paycheck to paycheck even if each individual stream is small because they don't all arrive on the same day. Money flows in throughout the month. Some weeks are better than others, but there's always something coming. This is how you break free from the job trap. Not by quitting your job before you're ready, but by building other streams while you still have the safety of steady income. You're building your escape plan, brick by brick, dollar by dollar. And here's the beautiful part. In today's world, creating multiple income streams is easier than ever. You can sell products online without inventory. You can offer services globally from your laptop. You can invest with apps on your phone. You can monetize your knowledge, your skills, your hobbies, your time. The opportunities are endless. The only question is whether you'll start building or keep, depending on that single fragile stream. Think about farmers. They don't plant just one crop. They plant several because they know some years one crop fails and another thrives. They diversify because that's how you survive and prosper over the long term. Your income should work the same way. Plant multiple seeds. tend multiple gardens, create multiple streams, because the person with one source of income is always one disaster away from broke. But the person with many sources, they're building something that can't be taken away by one bad event, one bad boss, one bad economy. The question to ask yourself, what's one additional way I could create income in the next 30 days? Find the answer, then build it. Your financial security depends on it. Rule 5. Smart risks. There are two types of people who stay broke forever, those who take no risks and those who take stupid risks. The first group plays it safe. They keep their money in a savings account, earning nothing. They stay at the same job for 30 years, hoping for a small raise. They never invest, never start anything, never try anything new, because they're terrified of losing what little they have. The second group does the opposite. They gamble. They chase get-rich-quick schemes. They invest in things they don't understand. They quit their job with no plan. They risk everything on one bet and wonder why they keep losing. Both groups are making the same mistake. They don't understand how risk actually works. This is the rule of smart risks. Think before you leap. Real wealth isn't built by avoiding all risk. That's impossible. Keeping money in cash is a risk because inflation eats it away. Staying at a dead-end job is a risk because you're losing years you can't get back. Playing it too safe is actually one of the riskiest things you can do. But real wealth also isn't built by being reckless. The person who bets their rent money on cryptocurrency or quits their job to chase a half-baked idea isn't brave. They're foolish, and foolishness gets punished. Smart risk is different. Smart risk is
care that goes where you go. That's international travel insurance through NHP. We facilitate cover of up to 10 million Namibian dollars per member for medical emergencies abroad as part of your membership. No extra charge. To receive your policy within minutes, simply register at nhp.com.na before you travel. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Calculated. It's informed. It's intentional. Smart risk means you do your homework first. You learn about what you're investing in. You understand the odds. You know what you could lose and what you could gain. You go in with your eyes open, not with blind hope. Smart risk means you never bet money you can't afford to lose. You don't risk the rent. You don't risk the grocery money. You don't risk your emergency fund. You risk money that, if it disappeared tomorrow, wouldn't destroy your life. Smart risk means you diversify. You don't put everything into one investment, one business, one opportunity. You spread it out so that if one fails, you're still okay. Smart risk means you start small and test things. You don't invest your life savings into an untested idea. You start with a small amount, see what happens, learn from it, and then decide whether to invest more. Think about successful entrepreneurs. The ones who actually make it aren't the ones who bet everything on one wild idea. They're the ones who tested their idea while keeping their job, who started small and grew gradually, who had backup plans and exit strategies, who calculated every move. They took risks, yes, but they were smart risks, measured risks, risks they could recover from if things went wrong. Here's what most people don't understand. Risk and reward are connected, but not in the way they think. Bigger risks don't automatically mean bigger rewards. Stupid risks usually mean bigger losses. Smart, calculated risks are what create real rewards. When you understand what you're doing, when you're strategic, when you're prepared, the odds shift in your favor. You're not gambling anymore. You're making informed decisions. This applies to everything. Starting a side business is a risk, but doing it while you still have a job is smart. Investing in the stock market is a risk, but learning about it first and diversifying your investments is smart. Asking for a raise is a risk, but doing it after you've proven your value is smart. The key is knowing the difference between a smart risk and a stupid one. A stupid risk is based on hope, emotion, or desperation. A smart risk is based on knowledge, preparation, and logic. A stupid risk has no backup plan. A smart risk always has an exit strategy. A stupid risk could destroy you financially. A smart risk might set you back temporarily, but won't ruin your life. A stupid risk ignores warning signs. A smart risk pays attention to red flags and adjusts accordingly. The wealthiest people in the world are risk takers, but they're not reckless gamblers. They calculate, they prepare, they protect themselves. They take risks that have favorable odds and manageable downsides. You need to do the same. You can't play it completely safe and expect to build wealth, but you also can't be reckless and expect to survive. Find the middle ground. Take calculated risks. Do your research. Start small. Protect your downside. Learn as you go. Build your risk tolerance gradually. The person who never risks anything stays exactly where they are forever. The person who risks everything usually loses it all. But the person who takes smart risks, they move forward, they grow, they build wealth. The question to ask before taking any risk: what's the worst that could happen, and can I handle it? If the answer is yes, and the potential reward is worth it, take the risk. If the answer is no, walk away and find a smarter opportunity. Rule 6. Always learning. Your income has a ceiling. And that ceiling is determined by one thing: what you know. You can work harder, you can work longer hours, you can hustle and grind until you're exhausted. But if you're not learning, if you're not growing, if you're not constantly upgrading what you know, your income will hit a wall and stay there. This is the rule that separates people who grow wealthy from people who stay stuck. The more you learn, the more you earn. Think about it. The person who knows more about their industry gets promoted. The person who learns new skills gets better opportunities. The person who understands money makes better financial decisions. The person who keeps learning keeps growing their value in the marketplace. But most people stop learning the day they finish school. They think education is something that happens in classrooms and ends with a diploma. So they stop reading, they stop studying, they stop growing, and then they wonder why their income never grows either. Here's the truth. School taught you how to memorize and take tests. It didn't teach you how to make money. It didn't teach you how to invest. It didn't teach you how to negotiate. It didn't teach you how to build a business or manage people or sell or market or think strategically. All the things that actually create wealth, you have to teach yourself. And the beautiful part is that you can. Everything you need to know is available. Books, videos, podcasts, courses, articles, mentors. Most of it is free or incredibly cheap. The only question is whether you'll take the time to learn it. Wealthy people read. Not fiction for entertainment, though that's fine too. They read books that teach them something. Books about business, money, psychology, marketing, leadership, investing. They read biographies of successful people to understand how they think. They study their field constantly to stay ahead. They know that one idea from one book can change everything. One concept can unlock a new income stream. One strategy can save them thousands. One skill can make them irreplaceable. Poor people watch TV. Wealthy people read books. It's that simple. But learning isn't just about books. It's about being curious. It's about asking questions. It's about paying attention to how successful people operate. It's about learning from your mistakes instead of repeating them. It's about seeking feedback, even when it's uncomfortable. Every person you meet knows something you don't. Every experience teaches something if you're paying attention. Every failure contains lessons if you're willing to examine it honestly. The person who never learns stays doing the same work at the same level for the same pay forever. They become replaceable because anyone can do what they do. They have no leverage, no options, no growth. But the person who never stops learning, they become more valuable every single year. They develop skills that set them apart. They understand things others don't. They see opportunities others miss. They command higher pay because they deliver higher value. And here's what makes this rule powerful. Learning compounds just like money does. Each thing you learn builds on the previous thing. Knowledge connects to knowledge. Skills combine to create new capabilities. The more you know, the faster you learn new things because you have more mental frameworks to plug new information into. This is why successful people seem to keep getting more successful. They're not lucky. They're learning faster than everyone else. They're growing their capabilities while others are standing still. You want to double your income? Learn skills that are worth twice as much. You want financial freedom? Learn how money actually works. You want better opportunities? Learn what makes you valuable in the marketplace. The investment you make in your own education will pay better returns than almost anything else. A $500 course that teaches you a skill worth an extra $10,000 a year is the best investment you'll ever make. A $20 book that changes how you think about money could be worth millions over your lifetime. But most people won't invest in learning because they don't see immediate results. They'd rather spend that money on something they can touch, something that makes them feel good right now. So they stay exactly where they are, while the people who invest in learning move ahead. Don't be that person. Be someone who's always learning, always growing, always getting better. Read for 30 minutes every day. Listen to educational podcasts during your commute. Take one course every quarter. Learn one new skill every year. Find mentors who know more than you. Ask questions. Stay curious. Make learning a habit, not an event. Not something you do when you feel like it, but something you do every single day, as naturally as eating or sleeping. Your future income is being created right now by what you're learning today. The question is, are you learning things that will make you more valuable, or are you staying the same? The action to take today: buy one book about money, business, or a valuable skill. Then actually read it. Your education is your responsibility now. Make it your priority. Rule 7. Good company. Show me your friends, and I'll show you your future. This isn't just a saying. It's one of the most powerful rules of money that nobody talks about. The people you spend time with are either lifting you up or dragging you down. There's no neutral ground. If your friends are broke, you'll stay broke. If your friends complain about money, you'll complain about money. If your friends have no ambition, you'll have no ambition. Not because you're weak, but because humans are wired to match the people around them. This is the rule of good company. Choose your friends wisely. Think about the 5 people you spend the most time with. Add up their income and divide by 5. That number is probably very close to your income. Now look at their attitudes about money, their habits, their goals, their work ethic. You'll see yourself reflected back. This happens unconsciously. You pick up their vocabulary, you adopt their beliefs, you mirror their behaviors. If they think rich people are evil, you'll think that too. If they believe success requires luck, you'll believe that too. If they spend every dollar they make, you'll do the same. Your environment shapes you more than your willpower ever could. This is why poor people often stay poor even when they get money. They're still surrounded by poor thinking. Their friends and family have expectations, opinions, and habits that pull them back down. They feel guilty for trying to improve. They feel like they're betraying their group by wanting more. Rich people understand this instinctively. They don't hang around broke people who complain all day. They don't spend time with people who have given up on their dreams. They surround themselves with ambitious people, successful people, people who challenge them to grow. Not because they're snobs, because they know that environment is everything. If you want to be healthy, spend time with healthy people. If you want to be successful, spend time with successful people. If you want to be wealthy, spend time with people who understand money and are building wealth. This doesn't mean you abandon your old friends, but it does mean you need to be honest about who's helping you grow and who's keeping you stuck. That friend who mocks you for reading business books? Who makes fun of you for saving money? Who calls you cheap when you skip expensive dinners? Who tells you your goals are unrealistic? That friend is an anchor holding you underwater. You can love them from a distance, but you can't let them influence your daily decisions. Instead, find people who are where you want to be. People who are building businesses. People who are investing. People who are learning and growing. People who celebrate your progress instead of resenting it. This might mean joining new groups, going to networking events, taking courses where serious people gather, finding mentors, getting involved in communities focused on growth and success. It might feel uncomfortable at first. You might feel like you don't belong. Good. That discomfort means you're stretching, growing, becoming someone new. Here's what happens when you upgrade your circle. Your standards rise. What seemed impossible starts looking achievable because you see others doing it. You learn strategies and mindsets you never knew existed. You get introduced to opportunities you never would have found alone. The conversations change. Instead of complaining about jobs, people discuss investments. Instead of gossiping about others, people share what they're building. Instead of making excuses, people solve problems. And slowly, without even trying, you become like them. You think bigger. You act bolder. You expect more from yourself. Not because you're forcing it, but because it's normal in your new environment. This is why masterminds work. Why mentorship is powerful. Why networking matters. You're literally reprogramming your brain by changing who influences it. But here's the warning. If you stay in the wrong environment, nothing else matters. You can read all the books, take all the courses, set all the goals. But if you're surrounded by people who think small, who fear risk, who resent success, you'll be pulled back to their level. Your friends are either assets or liabilities. They're either helping you build wealth or helping you stay broke. There's no middle ground. Look at your circle honestly. Are they pushing you forward or holding you back? Are they celebrating your wins or minimizing them? Are they doing things worth emulating or things you need to avoid? Then make the hard choice. Spend less time with people who drain you. Spend more time with people who inspire you. Find your tribe of people who are going somewhere, building something, becoming someone. Your future is too important to let the wrong people influence it. The action to take this week. Find one person who is more successful than you and ask them to coffee. Learn from them. Start building a circle that lifts you higher. You become who you surround yourself with. Choose carefully. Rule 8. Giving. This rule sounds backwards. You want more money, so the last thing you should do is give it away, right? Wrong. The people who hold on to every dollar with clenched fists usually stay broke. The people who give freely, who share generously, who help others without expecting anything back, tend to prosper in ways that seem almost magical. This is the rule of giving. What you give away returns multiplied. Before you dismiss this as wishful thinking or spiritual nonsense, understand that this rule works for very practical reasons. First, giving breaks the scarcity mindset. When you're afraid there's not enough, when you hoard every penny out of fear, you're operating from poverty consciousness. You're telling yourself and the universe that you don't have enough, that more isn't coming, that you need to protect what little you have. But when you give, even when you don't have much, you're declaring abundance. You're saying, I have enough to share. More is coming. I trust that I'll be okay, and that shift in mindset changes everything about how you see opportunities, take action, and attract wealth. Second, giving creates goodwill and relationships. When you help someone, when you're generous with your time, knowledge, or money, people remember. They want to help you back. They refer opportunities to you. They think of you when something good comes along. You can't calculate exactly when or how this returns to you, but it does. The person you helped 5 years ago might be in a position to change your life today. The favor you did for free might lead to a contract worth thousands. The advice you gave freely might build a relationship that opens doors you never knew existed. Third, giving forces you to earn more. If you commit to giving 10% of your income, you can't just earn the same amount forever. You're motivated to increase your income because you want to give more. Generosity creates a positive pressure to grow. Think about the wealthiest people in the world. Almost all of them are massive givers. They donate millions, sometimes billions, and somehow they keep getting richer. Not despite their giving, but partially because of it. Giving keeps money flowing. Money is like water. It needs to move. When you dam it up, when you hoard it, it stagnates. When you let it flow through you, more flows in to replace it. But here's the key. Give without expectation. Don't give to get. Don't give, and then sit around waiting for your reward. Give because it feels right. Give because someone needs help. Give because you remember what it's like to struggle, and you want to make someone's path easier. Give to causes you believe in. Give to people who are trying to improve their lives. Give to organizations doing good work. Give tips generously. Give your time and knowledge freely to those who are genuinely trying to learn. Start small if you need to. If you're broke, give $1. Give your time. Give encouragement. Give advice. Give help. The amount doesn't matter as much as the habit of giving. As your income grows, grow your giving proportionally. If you give 10% when you make $30,000, give 10% when you make $300,000. Don't let increased income make you stingy. Here's what you'll notice. The more you give, the less stressed you feel about money. There's a weird peace that comes with generosity. You stop operating from fear and start operating from abundance, and that mental shift alone is worth more than whatever you gave away. You'll also notice opportunities appearing, not because giving is magic, but because givers attract other givers. Generous people want to work with generous people. They trust them. They refer them. They include them in opportunities. Meanwhile, the takers, the hoarders, the stingy people who nickel and dime everything, people avoid them. Nobody wants to help someone who never helps others. Nobody wants to do business with someone who's always trying to get something for nothing. The universe, or human nature, if you prefer, has a way of balancing things out. What you put out comes back. Maybe not immediately, maybe not in the way you expect, but it comes back. This doesn't mean be stupid with your money. Don't give to people who will waste it. Don't enable bad behavior. Don't give so much that you can't pay your bills. Use wisdom, but within reason. Be generous. Give to people who are genuinely trying. Give to causes that create real impact. Give to communities that helped you when you were struggling. Give in ways that multiply value rather than just consuming it. And watch what happens, not just externally, but internally. Watch how your relationship with money changes. Watch how your confidence grows. Watch how opportunities seem to find you. Giving isn't just good for others. It's one of the smartest financial strategies you can employ because it transforms you into the kind of person who attracts wealth rather than repels it. The action to take today. Give something to someone who needs it. Money, time, advice, help. Whatever you can offer, don't expect anything back. Just give. Start the flow. The returns will surprise you. Rule 9. Taking charge. The moment you stop blaming others for your financial situation is the moment everything changes. As long as you blame the economy, the government, your boss, your parents, your education, your circumstances, you're powerless. You're a victim. And victims don't build wealth because they're too busy explaining why they can't. This is the rule of taking charge. Your life is your responsibility. Nobody is coming to save you. Not the government, not your family, not your employer, not some lucky break. If your financial life is going to change, you're the one who has to change it. This is hard to accept because blaming is easier. It feels better to point at external forces and say, "That's why I'm broke." It removes the pressure. It gives you an excuse, it lets you off the hook, but it also keeps you trapped. When you blame external forces, you give away your power. You're saying, "My success depends on things I can't control." And if that's true, then you might as well give up because you can't control the economy, or your past, or what other people do. But when you take full responsibility, when you say, "My financial situation is a result of my choices, and I can make different choices starting now," you take your power back. Suddenly you're not helpless. You're in the driver's seat. Yes, some people start with advantages. Yes, life isn't fair. Yes, some people face obstacles others don't. All of that is true. But it doesn't change the fundamental reality. You're responsible for what you do with what you've got. Two people can start in the same situation, same background, same education, same opportunities. 5 years later, one is thriving and one is struggling. The difference isn't luck. It's choices. It's responsibility. It's whether they took charge or made excuses. Think about your financial situation right now. Really think about it. How much of it is because of decisions you made? Money you spent that you could have saved? Jobs you didn't apply for? Skills you didn't learn? Opportunities you didn't pursue? Advice you didn't follow? Be honest. Most of where you are is because of you. That's not meant to make you feel bad. It's meant to empower you. Because if your choices created your current situation, then different choices can create a different situation. You're in debt? Your responsibility to get out? You're underpaid? Your responsibility to develop skills that command more? You're stuck in a dead-end job? Your responsibility to find a better one or create your own opportunity? Stop waiting for someone to fix it for you. Stop waiting for permission. Stop waiting for perfect conditions. Take charge now with what you have. This means making hard decisions. It means sacrificing things you want now for things you want more later. It means doing things that are uncomfortable. It means taking risks when it would be easier to play it safe. It means looking at yourself honestly and admitting where you've been wrong, where you've been lazy, where you've made poor choices. Not to beat yourself up, but to learn and do better. Taking responsibility doesn't mean you can't ask for help. It doesn't mean you have to do everything alone. It just means you own your situation and you're committed to improving it regardless of what anyone else does or doesn't do. The poor mindset says, "I can't because..." and then lists all the reasons why circumstances are holding them back. The wealth mindset says, "How can I?" and then finds a way forward despite the circumstances. Same situations, different responses, different results. When you take full responsibility, you stop wasting energy on blame and complaints. You stop waiting for things to change. You stop feeling sorry for yourself. Instead, you channel all that energy into action. You don't like your income? Learn skills that pay more. You don't have savings? Cut expenses and start saving something, even if it's small. You don't have opportunities? Create them. You don't know how? Learn. There's always something you can do. Always. The question is whether you'll do it or whether you'll come up with another excuse for why you can't. The wealthiest people didn't get there by making excuses. They got there by taking responsibility for their outcomes and doing whatever it took to improve them. They didn't wait for permission or perfect conditions. They took charge. Your financial future isn't determined by where you started or what happened to you. It's determined by what you choose to do from this point forward. You can spend the next 5 years blaming and complaining and explaining why you can't get ahead. Or you can spend the next 5 years taking responsibility and taking action and building the life you want. Either way, 5 years will pass. The only question is where you'll be when it does. Stop pointing fingers. Stop making excuses. Stop playing the victim. Take charge of your financial life like the adult you are. This is your life, your money, your responsibility. Own it. The question to ask yourself, what's one thing I've been blaming others for that I could actually take responsibility for and change? Answer it honestly, then take action today. Rule 10, protecting your energy. Time is money. You've heard that before. But there's something even more valuable than time, your energy. You can have all the time in the world, but if you're exhausted, distracted, and depleted, that time is worthless. You won't think clearly. You won't make good decisions. You won't take action. You'll just exist, barely getting by. This is the rule most people ignore until it's too late. Guard your time like treasure. Your energy, mental, physical, emotional, is your most limited resource. Everything you accomplish requires it. Every decision you make drains it. Every interaction either adds to it or takes from it. Rich people understand this instinctively. They protect their energy ruthlessly. They say no to most things. They avoid energy vampires. They structure their lives to preserve their capacity to think, create, and execute. Poor people give their energy away freely. They say yes to everything. They let anyone interrupt them. They spend hours on things that don't matter. They wonder why they're always tired and never getting ahead. Think about your typical day. How much of your energy goes to things that actually move you forward? And how much gets wasted on distractions, drama, and things that don't matter? Social media alone steals hours of potential from millions of people every single day. You open it for just a minute, and suddenly 30 minutes are gone. That's 30 minutes you could have spent learning something, building something, or earning something. Instead, you spent it scrolling through other people's lives while yours stays the same. Television is another energy drain. You come home tired and collapse in front of the screen for 3 hours. You tell yourself you're relaxing, but you're really just numbing out. The next day you wake up still tired, having accomplished nothing, having learned nothing, having built nothing. Then there are the people who drain you. The friend who always has a crisis, the coworker who complains constantly, the family member who criticizes everything you do. Every interaction with them leaves you depleted, stressed, and less capable of focusing on what matters. You can't build wealth when you're exhausted. You can't make good financial decisions when your brain is fried. You can't pursue opportunities when you have nothing left to give. This is why protecting your energy isn't selfish. It's essential. Start by identifying what drains you. What activities leave you feeling depleted? What people exhaust you? What habits steal your focus? Write them down. Look at them honestly. Then ask yourself, what would happen if you eliminated these things? What if you cut your social media time in half? What if you watched one less hour of TV every night? What if you spent less time with people who drain you? You'd have energy left over. Energy you could invest in things that actually matter. Energy to learn, to build, to create. To think strategically about your finances and your future. Now identify what energizes you. What activities leave you feeling recharged? What people inspire you? What habits create clarity and focus? For some people, it's exercise. For others, it's reading. Some people recharge in silence. Others need conversation with the right people. Some need nature. Others need creative work. Whatever energizes you, you need more of it. Not as a reward after you've exhausted yourself, but as a foundation that allows you to operate at your highest level. Wealthy people structure their entire lives around energy management. They wake up early when their mind is fresh and tackle their most important work first. They exercise because it creates energy, not just burns calories. They eat well because nutrition affects mental clarity. They sleep enough because tired people make expensive mistakes. They schedule their days intentionally. They batch similar tasks together. They create boundaries around their time. They have systems that prevent energy leaks. They automate and delegate everything that doesn't require their personal attention. And most importantly, they say no, a lot, to opportunities that don't align with their goals, to requests for their time, to distractions disguised as urgencies. They understand that every yes to something unimportant is a no to something that matters. You need to do the same. Start treating your energy like the precious resource it is. Stop giving it away to things and people that don't deserve it. Turn off notifications. Set boundaries with people who drain you. Cut back on activities that numb you instead of energizing you. Protect your sleep. Eat food that fuels you. Move your body. Create space for deep thought. The hour you spend planning your week will save you 10 hours of wasted effort. The morning routine that energizes you will make you twice as productive. The boundary you set with an energy vampire will free up mental space for opportunities. This isn't about becoming a robot or working every minute. It's about being intentional. It's about investing your limited energy in things that create returns instead of wasting it on things that create nothing. Your financial success is directly tied to how well you manage your energy. Tired people don't build wealth. Distracted people don't seize opportunities. Depleted people don't have the capacity to think strategically or act decisively. Protect your energy like your wealth depends on it, because it does. The action to take this week: identify your biggest energy drain and eliminate or reduce it. Replace that time with something that energizes you. Your energy is your wealth. Guard it ruthlessly. Rule 11. Knowing what people want. You can have the best product in the world, but if nobody wants it, you'll make nothing. You can work harder than anyone, but if you're working on the wrong things, you'll stay broke. You can be incredibly talented, but if that talent doesn't solve a problem people care about, it's worthless in the marketplace. This is the rule that separates successful people from struggling people. Find out what's needed and provide it. Most people approach money backwards. They think about what they want to do, what they're interested in, what they think is cool, and then they try to make money from it. And they're shocked when nobody buys. Smart people do the opposite. They look at what people are already buying. They identify problems people are desperately trying to solve. They find gaps in the market where demand exists, but supply is weak. Then they provide exactly what's needed. It's not about you. It's about them. Your customers don't care about your passion or your dreams or how hard you worked. They care about their problems and whether you can solve them. That's it. That's the whole game. Think about any successful business. What are they really selling? Not products. Solutions. Not features. Results. Not stuff. Transformation. Apple doesn't sell phones. They sell status.
With the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99, 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99, 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken portions for $79.99, and 10 kg Bokomo fat cook flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at voermanbrock.com. We care.
The views in
a simplicity and belonging to a tribe. Starbucks doesn't sell coffee. They sell a comfortable space and a small daily luxury. Nike doesn't sell shoes. They sell the feeling of being an athlete. They understand what people actually want, not just what they say they want. People say they want to save money, but they spend extra for convenience. They say they want quality, but they buy based on how something makes them feel. They say they want information, but they buy entertainment. Your job is to understand the gap between what people say they want and what they actually pay for. This requires listening, watching, paying attention to where money flows. What are people complaining about? What problems keep coming up? What are they willing to pay premium prices for? Where are businesses thriving and why? The opportunities are everywhere once you start looking. Every complaint is a business idea. Every inconvenience is a potential service. Every gap between expectation and reality is a chance to create value. But most people don't look. They create what they want to create and then try to convince people to buy it. They fall in love with their idea and ignore the market's feedback. They blame customers for not understanding instead of adapting to what customers actually want. Here's the reality. The market is always right. If people aren't buying, it's not because they're stupid or cheap or don't appreciate quality. It's because you're not offering what they actually want in a way they're willing to pay for. This doesn't mean you have to abandon your interests or passions. It means you need to find where your interests intersect with market demand, where what you enjoy doing solves problems people will pay to have solved. Love cooking? People need meal prep services, catering, food blogs, recipe books, cooking classes. Love writing? People need copywriters, content creators, ghostwriters, editors. Love organizing? People need professional organizers, productivity consultants, system builders. The key is understanding what version of your skill the market actually wants and will pay for. Sometimes it's not the skill itself, but how you package it. A fitness trainer struggling to get clients might thrive by specializing in a specific niche, busy executives, new mothers, people recovering from injuries, same skills, different positioning, completely different results. You also need to understand timing and trends. What's growing? What's declining? Where is demand increasing? Technology creates new problems constantly, which means new opportunities for solutions. Remote work exploded, creating demand for home office equipment, video conferencing tools, productivity software, and co-working spaces. People got health conscious, creating markets for organic food, fitness apps, and wellness coaching. Each trend creates waves of opportunity for those paying attention. But here's the trap. Don't just chase trends. Understand underlying human needs that persist regardless of trends. People always need to eat, sleep, feel safe, be entertained, connect with others, solve problems, save time, avoid pain, and feel good about themselves. Trends change how these needs are met, but the needs themselves don't disappear. The person who understands fundamental human psychology will always find opportunities, even as specific markets shift. Start paying attention differently. When you see a successful business, ask yourself what need they're really meeting. When you see people spending money, ask what problem they're solving. When you hear complaints, ask what opportunity they represent. Stop creating in a vacuum. Test your ideas quickly and cheaply. Ask potential customers what they'd actually pay for. Watch what they do, not just what they say. Adjust based on feedback. The market will tell you exactly what it wants if you're willing to listen. Most people aren't willing. They're too attached to their original idea. They're too proud to adapt. They're too stubborn to give people what they actually want. Don't be that person. Be flexible. Be responsive. Be market-driven. Your job isn't to convince people to want what you're offering. Your job is to offer what people already want in a way that's better, faster, cheaper, or more convenient than alternatives. Do that, and the money will follow. The question to ask yourself, what do people in my industry or community consistently complain about or wish was easier? Find the answer, then build the solution. That's where the money is. Rule 12. Working smarter. There are only 24 hours in a day. You can't work more than that. You can't clone yourself. You can't stop sleeping forever. Your time and energy are limited. So if you want to make more money, you can't just work harder. You need to work smarter. You need to multiply your effort. You need leverage. This is the rule that separates the wealthy from the exhausted. Use tools and help to do more. Think about a person digging a hole with their hands. They work hard. They sweat. They exhaust themselves. After a full day, they've made a small hole. Now think about a person with a shovel. Same effort, much bigger hole. Now think about a person with a backhoe. Same time, a massive hole. Same hours worked, completely different results. That's leverage. Wealthy people understand this instinctively. They're not working harder than you. They're using leverage to multiply their effort. They're using tools, systems, people, and money to accomplish what would be impossible alone. Poor people trade time for money directly. 1 hour of work equals 1 hour of pay. If they don't work, they don't get paid. Their income is capped by how many hours they can physically work. Wealthy people break this equation. They find ways to get paid while they sleep. They create systems that work without them. They build teams that multiply their capacity. They use technology to scale their impact. The first type of leverage is tools and technology. Why do things manually when software can do it faster and better? Why spend hours on tasks that can be automated? Why use outdated methods when better tools exist? Every hour you spend doing something a tool could do is an hour wasted. That time could be spent on higher value activities that actually require your unique skills and judgment. Learn the tools of your trade. Master them. Use them to work faster and produce better results. The person who learns to use spreadsheets effectively can do in minutes what takes others hours. The person who masters design software can create in an afternoon what used to take days. The person who uses automation tools can handle workloads that would normally require a team. The second type of leverage is other people. You have skills and talents, but you don't have all of them. You can't be expert at everything. You can't do everything yourself. Successful people delegate. They hire. They outsource. They collaborate. They understand that paying someone else to do tasks they're not good at frees them up to focus on tasks that create the most value. If you make $100 an hour doing what you're best at, why would you spend that hour doing $10 an hour work like cleaning, data entry, or basic administrative tasks? Hire someone else to do those things and spend your time where it matters most. But most people resist this. They think they can't afford help. They think they need to do everything themselves. So they stay trapped trading hours for dollars, never able to scale beyond their personal capacity. Here's the truth. You can't afford not to get help. Every hour you spend on low-value tasks is an hour you're not spending on high-value activities that could transform your income. Start small if you need to. Hire a virtual assistant for 5 hours a week. Outsource one task you hate doing. Find one person whose skills complement yours. It doesn't have to be perfect or permanent. Just start building the habit of leverage. The third type of leverage is systems. A system is a repeatable process that produces consistent results without requiring you to reinvent the wheel every time. Wealthy people build systems for everything. Systems for finding customers. Systems for delivering value. Systems for handling money. Systems for making decisions. Once the system is built, it runs itself or can be handed to someone else to run. If you're manually doing the same task over and over, you need a system. Document it. Template it, automate it, make it so simple that anyone could follow it. Then you're free to focus on building the next system or scaling the ones you have. The fourth type of leverage is money itself. Money can be used to make more money. Investments work for you 24 hours a day. Real estate generates income while you sleep. Businesses you own but don't operate create cash flow without your direct labor. This is why the poor stay poor and the rich get richer. Poor people spend all their money on consumption. Rich people use their money as a tool to create more money. Every dollar you have is a little employee that could be working for you. The question is whether you're putting it to work or letting it sit idle. The final type of leverage is knowledge and systems you create once, but benefit from repeatedly. Write a book and it can sell for years. Create a course and it can generate income indefinitely. Build a product and it can be sold thousands of times. Develop intellectual property and it can create value long after the initial work is done. This is the difference between trading time for money and creating assets that generate income repeatedly from a single effort. Look at your current work. How much of it depends entirely on you showing up and doing it yourself? If you stopped working tomorrow, would money still flow in? If the answer is no, you don't have enough leverage. Start building it now. Identify which tasks could be automated, delegated, or systematized. Find tools that multiply your productivity. Bring in help, even if it's small at first. Create assets that work without you. The goal isn't to stop working. It's to multiply the impact of your work so that each hour produces 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times more value than it could if you were doing everything manually by yourself. That's how wealth is built, not through exhaustion, but through leverage. The action to take this week. Identify one task you do regularly that could be automated, delegated, or systematized. Then take the first step to make it happen. Your income is limited by your leverage. Start building it today. Rule 13. Learning from mistakes. Failure is expensive, but repeating the same failure is even more expensive. Everyone makes mistakes with money. Everyone has failures. Everyone loses sometimes. That's not the problem. The problem is what you do after the failure. Most people make a mistake and then pretend it didn't happen. They ignore it. They make excuses. They blame others. And then they make the exact same mistake again next month, next year, for their entire life. This is the rule of learning from mistakes. Every failure teaches something valuable. The wealthy look at their failures differently. They don't see them as permanent defeats. They see them as expensive lessons. They examine what went wrong. They figure out what they can learn. They extract the lesson and make sure they never pay for that same lesson twice. Think about a business that fails. Some people will walk away bitter, convinced that business doesn't work, that the world is unfair, that they were unlucky. They learn nothing except fear. Other people will analyze exactly what went wrong. They'll identify their mistakes in planning, execution, or timing. They'll understand which assumptions were wrong. They'll recognize what they didn't know that they needed to know. And their next business will avoid those exact mistakes. Same failure, completely different outcomes. One person paid for a lesson they'll never use. The other person paid for education that makes them nearly unstoppable. This applies to everything. You make a bad investment? Don't just lose the money and move on. Figure out why it was bad. What did you miss? What red flags did you ignore? What research didn't you do? Learn from it so you never make that mistake again. You overspend and blow your budget? Don't just feel guilty and repeat it next month. Analyze what triggered the spending. Was it emotion? Boredom? Social pressure? Lack of planning? Once you understand the why, you can fix the root cause instead of just feeling bad about the symptom. You get passed over for a promotion? Don't just complain that it's unfair. Ask yourself honestly, what skills or results you lacked? What did the person who got promoted have that you didn't? What can you develop so that next time you're the obvious choice? Every setback contains information. Every failure has a lesson. But you have to be willing to look at it honestly instead of just emotionally. This requires humility. You have to admit you were wrong. You have to acknowledge that you made poor choices or had gaps in your knowledge. You have to take responsibility instead of blaming. Most people can't do this. Their ego won't let them. So they keep making the same mistakes, wondering why life keeps hitting them with the same problems. Here's the truth. Life will keep teaching you the same lesson until you learn it. If you keep going broke, there's a lesson about spending or earning you haven't learned yet. If you keep getting into bad business deals, there's a lesson about due diligence or judgment you're missing. If you keep feeling stuck, there's a lesson about action or mindset you need to understand. The universe is patient. It will give you the same test over and over until you pass it. Smart people recognize patterns. They see when the same type of problem keeps appearing and they ask themselves what they're not learning. They dig deep. They get honest. They find the root cause and address it. This is also why successful people often have spectacular failures in their past. Not because failure makes you successful, but because they learn to extract maximum value from every failure. Each mistake made them smarter, tougher, and more capable. Meanwhile, people who've never failed often haven't succeeded much either. They've played it so safe that they never risked enough to fail, which also means they never pushed themselves enough to grow. The goal isn't to avoid failure. That's impossible if you're actually trying to accomplish anything. The goal is to fail forward. To fail fast, learn quickly, and move on to the next attempt armed with better knowledge. Keep a failure journal. Write down every significant mistake you make with money, not to beat yourself up, but to learn from it. What happened? Why did it happen? What will you do differently next time? Review it regularly so the lessons stay fresh. When something goes wrong, give yourself a day to feel bad about it. Then shift to learning mode. Emotion is fine, but it can't last forever. Extract the lesson, apply it, move forward. Also learn from other people's failures. You don't need to make every mistake yourself. Read about businesses that failed and why. Study investment scams and how people fell for them. Learn from others so you can avoid paying the same price they did. Every successful person you admire has failed more times than most people have tried. The difference is, they learned from every failure. They got smarter with each attempt. They didn't let failure define them. They let it refine them. Your mistakes are only wasted if you don't learn from them. Otherwise, they're investments in your education. Expensive, yes. But invaluable if you actually use what they teach you. Stop running from failure. Stop hiding from mistakes. Stop pretending everything is fine when it's not. Face it, analyze it, learn from it, then use that knowledge to make better decisions going forward. The person who learns from every mistake becomes nearly unstoppable. They've already paid the price for that education. Now they get to keep the benefits forever. That's how you turn failures into fortune. The action to take today. Think about your biggest financial mistake. Write down exactly what you learned from it and what you'll do differently next time. Turn your mistakes into wisdom. That's how wealth is built. Rule 14. Speaking up. You're being underpaid right now, not because your employer is evil, not because the market is broken, but because you never asked for more. Most people accept whatever is offered to them. They take the first salary number they hear. They never negotiate. They never ask for raises. They never question prices. They just accept and then complain later about not having enough. This is the rule of speaking up. Ask for what you deserve. Money doesn't automatically flow to the deserving. It flows to those who ask for it, negotiate for it, and advocate for themselves. Think about job offers. Two people get offers for the same position. One accepts immediately, grateful just to have the job. The other negotiates, asking for 10% more. The company agrees. Same job, same work. But one person will make thousands more every single year from that point forward, just because they asked. Over a career, that one conversation could mean hundreds of thousands of dollars in difference. All because one person spoke up and the other didn't. But most people are terrified to negotiate. They're afraid of seeming greedy. They're afraid the offer will be withdrawn. They're afraid of rejection, so they accept less than they're worth and then resent it. Here's the truth. Companies expect negotiation. They often make initial offers below what they're actually willing to pay, knowing that good candidates will negotiate. If you don't negotiate, you're leaving money on the table that was yours for the asking. The same applies to raises. If you wait for your employer to notice your value and reward you accordingly, you'll wait forever. Companies are designed to minimize costs. They'll pay you as little as you'll accept. It's not personal. It's business. Your job is to make the case for why you deserve more. Document your results. Show the value you've created. Present the case clearly and confidently. Then ask for what you want. Will they always say yes? Number. But they'll never say yes if you never ask. And even when they say no, you've planted a seed. They now know you're aware of your value, and you're not going to quietly accept being underpaid forever. This applies everywhere. Money changes hands. Negotiating prices, asking for discounts, questioning fees, pushing back on unfair charges. Most people accept whatever they're told to pay, never realizing that almost everything is negotiable. That car price? Negotiable. That medical bill? Often negotiable. That service fee? Can probably be reduced or waived. That contractor's quote? There's usually room to discuss. But you have to ask. You have to be willing to have the conversation. You have to be comfortable advocating for yourself. The key is doing it with confidence and respect. You're not demanding or being difficult. You're simply stating what you believe is fair and seeing if there's room for agreement. Practice saying these sentences. I was hoping for something closer to X. Based on my research, I believe Y is more appropriate. Is there any flexibility on this number? I'd like to discuss the compensation. Most people never say any of these sentences in their entire lives. They just accept whatever is offered and wonder why they're always broke. Here's what changes when you start speaking up. You realize that asking doesn't hurt as much as you feared. You discover that people often say yes when you thought they'd say no. You learn that confidence in your value creates respect, not resentment. And even when the answer is no, you're better off. You know you tried. You don't spend years wondering, what if? You don't build resentment about being underpaid when you never actually asked to be paid more. Speaking up also applies to saying no. No to bad deals. No to people trying to take advantage of you. No to requests for your time or money that don't serve you. People will take as much as you let them. If you never push back, they'll keep pushing. If you never set boundaries, they'll keep crossing them. If you never stand up for your interests, nobody else will either. This doesn't mean being aggressive or rude. It means being clear about what works for you and what doesn't. It means stating your needs and standing firm on your boundaries. The person who never speaks up gets walked over. They get underpaid, overcharged, and taken advantage of. Not because people are evil, but because people naturally push until they hit resistance. If there's no resistance, they keep pushing. Your job is to provide that resistance, to speak up, to advocate for yourself, to make it clear what you will and won't accept. This feels uncomfortable at first. You might shake. Your voice might waver. That's normal. Do it anyway. It gets easier with practice. Start small. Negotiate something low stakes. Ask for a small discount. Question a charge on your bill. Push back on something minor. Build the muscle of speaking up so when it really matters, you're ready. Every dollar you don't ask for is a dollar you'll never get. Every negotiation you avoid is money you're voluntarily giving up. Every time you stay silent when you should speak up, you're choosing to be worth less than you are. Stop doing that. Stop accepting whatever is offered. Stop being grateful for crumbs when you deserve a feast. Stop letting fear keep you poor. Speak up. Ask for what you deserve. Negotiate. Advocate for yourself. Set boundaries. Say no to bad deals. The money is there, but only if you're willing to ask for it. The action to take this week. Ask for something you've been afraid to ask for. A raise. A discount. Better terms. Whatever it is, ask. The worst they can say is no, and you're no worse off than before. But if they say yes, your life just changed because you spoke up. Rule 15. Money knowledge. You can work hard your entire life and still die broke if you don't understand how money actually works. Most people know how to earn money. They go to work. They get a paycheck. That's the easy part. What they don't know is how to keep it, grow it, protect it, and make it work for them. This is the rule of money knowledge. Learn how money works. Schools don't teach this. They teach you history, math, and science. But they never teach you about taxes, investing, compound interest, inflation, or how to build wealth. You graduate knowing how to analyze Shakespeare, but not how to read a balance sheet. So most people learn about money the hard way, through mistakes, debt, and decades of struggle. Or they never learn at all and wonder why they're still broke at 60. You need to fix this. Now, before you waste more years making expensive mistakes that better knowledge would have prevented. Start with the basics. Understand the difference between assets and liabilities. An asset puts money in your pocket. A liability takes money out. Your house payment is a liability. A rental property that cash flows is an asset. Your car is a liability. Investments that generate income are assets. Wealthy people buy assets. Poor people buy liabilities and think they're assets. Understand compound interest. It's either working for you or against you. When you invest, compound interest makes your money grow exponentially over time. A small amount invested early becomes a fortune later. When you carry credit card debt, compound interest destroys you. The interest charges compound, and suddenly you owe twice what you borrowed. Albert Einstein supposedly called compound interest the most powerful force in the universe. Whether he said it or not, it's true. Understand it. Use it to your advantage. Learn about taxes. Most people have no idea how taxes actually work. They think everyone pays the same rate on all their income. They don't understand deductions, credits, tax-advantaged accounts, or the difference between earned income and passive income. Rich people pay accountants and tax professionals because they know that understanding taxes can save them thousands or even millions. Poor people do their own taxes with free software and miss opportunities that would have paid for professional help many times over. You don't need to become a tax expert, but you need to know enough to ask smart questions and make informed decisions. Know what's deductible, know what accounts save you taxes, know the difference between tax deferred and tax free. Know when it makes sense to pay for professional advice. Understand inflation. Your money loses value every year. If you're keeping everything in cash or a savings account earning almost nothing, inflation is eating your wealth. You're getting poorer in real terms, even though your account balance looks the same. This is why investing isn't optional if you want to build wealth. You need returns that outpace inflation, or you're moving backwards no matter how much you save. Learn about different investment vehicles. Stocks, bonds, real estate, businesses, index funds, retirement accounts. What are they? How do they work? What are the risks? What are the potential returns? What are the tax implications? You don't need to be an expert in everything, but you need basic literacy. You need to understand enough to make informed decisions and to know when you need expert help. Most importantly, learn to spot scams and bad deals. If something promises guaranteed high returns with no risk, it's a scam. If someone is pressuring you to invest immediately without time to think, it's probably a bad deal. If you don't understand how an investment makes money, don't invest in it. Financial illiteracy costs people everything. They fall for get-rich-quick schemes. They invest in things they don't understand. They make decisions based on emotion instead of knowledge. They trust the wrong people. They lose years of savings in preventable mistakes. Don't be that person. Invest time in learning before you invest money in anything. Read books about personal finance, not get-rich-quick books. Real books by people who understand money and can teach it clearly. Start with the basics and build from there. Follow reliable financial educators. Listen to podcasts. Watch educational videos. Take courses if they're from reputable sources. Learn from people who have the results you want and teach in a way you can understand. But be careful. The financial education industry is full of people selling false hope and bad advice. Look for educators who emphasize fundamentals over shortcuts, who acknowledge risks instead of just promising rewards, who have track records of actually building wealth, not just teaching about it. Ask questions. When someone offers financial advice, ask how they know. What's their experience? What are their credentials? Do they profit from the advice they're giving you? Are they selling something? True financial education empowers you to make your own informed decisions. It doesn't pressure you into buying specific products or following one path. It gives you knowledge and lets you apply it to your situation. Make financial education a priority. Spend 30 minutes a day learning about money. In a year, you'll know more than 90% of people. In 5 years, you'll be financially literate enough to build serious wealth. In 10 years, you'll wonder how you ever lived without this knowledge. The money you don't lose from avoiding mistakes will pay for your education 100 times over. The opportunities you recognize because you understand how they work will create wealth you couldn't have accessed otherwise. Ignorance about money is expensive. Education about money is priceless. Stop guessing. Stop hoping. Stop trusting blindly. Start learning. The action to take this week: buy or borrow one highly rated book about personal finance or investing. Read at least one chapter. Your financial future depends on what you know. Start learning today. Rule 16, following your purpose. Money without meaning is empty. You can have a big bank account and still feel hollow inside if you're spending your life doing things that don't matter to you. But here's what most people get wrong. They think they have to choose between purpose and profit. They believe that meaningful work doesn't pay well and that making good money requires selling your soul. This is the rule of following your purpose. Do what matters to you. The truth is more nuanced. Yes, some purposes are harder to monetize than others, but with creativity and strategy, almost any meaningful pursuit can become financially sustainable. And more importantly, when you're doing work that matters to you, you bring an energy and commitment that makes success far more likely. Think about people who are exceptional at what they do. The vast majority aren't just in it for the money. They genuinely care about their work. They're passionate about the problems they solve. They find meaning in what they create. That passion makes them better. They go deeper. They persist longer. They innovate more. They deliver higher quality. And the market rewards excellence, regardless of the field. Compare two restaurant owners. One just wants to make money and sees food as a commodity. The other loves cooking and genuinely cares about creating experiences that bring people joy. Who do you think builds the better restaurant? Who develops loyal customers? Who survives tough times? The one with purpose wins almost every time. This doesn't mean you should quit your job tomorrow to pursue your passion with no plan. That's foolish. But it does mean you should be moving toward work that aligns with what you care about, even if you have to do it gradually. Start by identifying what actually matters to you, not what you think should matter, not what your parents want, not what looks impressive, what genuinely lights you up, what problems do you care about solving, what kind of impact do you want to have. Maybe it's helping people get healthy, maybe it's creating beautiful things, maybe it's solving complex technical problems, maybe it's teaching, maybe it's building businesses, maybe it's making people laugh. Whatever it is, acknowledge it honestly. Then ask yourself, how can I align my work with this purpose while also making good money? This might mean pivoting your current job toward the aspects that matter most to you. It might mean starting a side project that combines purpose and profit. It might mean changing industries entirely, but doing it strategically with proper preparation. The key is finding the intersection between what you care about, what you're good at, and what people will pay for. All three circles need to overlap. Purpose without profit leads to burnout and resentment. You can't sustain meaningful work if you're constantly stressed about money. Profit without purpose leads to emptiness and eventually burnout of a different kind. You make money but hate your life.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Life. The sweet spot is work that matters to you and pays well enough to sustain you comfortably. Here's what changes when you align money with purpose. Work stops feeling like work. You have natural motivation instead of forcing yourself. You're willing to put in extra effort because you care about the outcome, not just the paycheck. You also become more creative and effective. When you care deeply about something, your brain works differently. You see opportunities others miss. You solve problems more elegantly. You persevere through obstacles that would stop someone just chasing money. This translates to better results, which translates to more money. Not always immediately, but over time, purpose-driven work tends to outperform purely profit-driven work because the quality and commitment are higher. But be realistic. Following your purpose doesn't mean every moment is joyful. There will still be hard work, boring tasks, difficult people, and challenges. Purpose doesn't eliminate struggle. It just makes the struggle feel worthwhile. Also, understand that purpose can evolve. What mattered to you at 20 might not matter as much at 40. That's fine. Don't lock yourself into one definition of purpose forever. Stay open to how your sense of meaning shifts as you grow. And don't romanticize struggle. Some people wear their suffering as a badge of honor, convincing themselves that true purpose requires poverty. That's nonsense. You can do meaningful work and make good money. In fact, making good money often increases your impact because you have more resources to deploy toward what matters. The starving artist mythology is just that, a myth. Many of the most impactful people in history were also quite wealthy and used that wealth to amplify their purpose. Your job is to find work where making money and making meaning aren't in conflict, where financial success and personal fulfillment support each other, where you can say honestly that you're doing work that matters and getting paid well to do it. This might take time to build. You might need to start with a job that pays the bills while you develop skills and opportunities in your purpose area. That's fine. Just keep moving toward the integration of purpose and profit rather than accepting they'll always be separate. Life is too short to spend it doing things that don't matter to you. Money is too important to ignore in pursuit of meaning. Find the path that honors both. When you do, everything changes. Work becomes energizing instead of draining. Success becomes fulfilling instead of empty. Money becomes a tool for amplifying what matters instead of compensation for sacrificing your soul. That's not just wealth. That's prosperity in the fullest sense. The question to ask yourself, if money wasn't a concern, what would I spend my time doing? Then ask, how could I get paid to do something related to that? Find the answer. Then build toward it. Your life and your wealth will both improve. Rule 17. Keeping extra. Most people live right at the edge. They spend everything they make. Their income matches their expenses almost perfectly. One unexpected bill, one emergency, one mistake, and they're in crisis. They have no margin, no buffer, no breathing room, and that makes them desperate, stressed, and vulnerable. This is the rule of keeping extra. Save for rainy days and opportunities. Having money saved isn't just about being responsible or cautious. It's about power. It's about freedom. It's about being able to make decisions based on what's smart instead of what's urgent. Think about two people facing a car breakdown that costs $1,000 to fix. The first person has no savings. This breakdown becomes a disaster. They have to put it on a credit card at high interest, or they can't get to work and risk losing their job, or they have to borrow from family and feel embarrassed, or they have to choose between fixing the car and paying rent. The second person has savings. The breakdown is annoying, but not a crisis. They pay for the repair, life continues, no stress. Same problem, completely different experience. That's the power of margin. But savings do more than just protect you from disasters. They enable you to seize opportunities. The best deals are almost always available to people who can pay cash now. The best investments often require immediate capital. The best job opportunities sometimes require you to move or take a temporary pay cut to invest in your future. If you have no savings, you can't take advantage of any of these opportunities. You're forced to watch them pass by while people with margin grab them. The person with savings can negotiate better. They can walk away from bad deals because they're not desperate. They can wait for the right opportunity instead of taking the first one. They can afford to be strategic. This is why the rich get richer. Not because they're lucky, but because they have the financial margin to capitalize on opportunities that poor people can't access even when they see them. So how much should you save? Start with 1 month of expenses as your first goal. That's your basic emergency fund. Once you hit that, go for 3 months, then 6 months. Some people build up to a year or more. The exact number depends on your situation. If you have a stable job and low fixed costs, 3 months might be plenty. If your income is unpredictable or you have dependents, you might want 6 to 12 months. The key is having enough that you're not one crisis away from disaster. But here's where most people struggle. They know they should save, but they never do. There's always something to buy, some reason to spend, some excuse for why this month isn't the right time to start. This is why you need to pay yourself first. Before you pay bills, before you buy anything, before you do anything else with your money, transfer a set amount to savings. Automate it, if possible, so it happens without you having to think about it. Even if it's just $50. Even if it's just 20, start somewhere. Build the habit. Get used to living on slightly less than you make. As your income grows, increase the amount you save, but never stop saving. Most people do the opposite. They spend first and save whatever is left over, which means they never save anything because there's never anything left over. Expenses always expand to match income unless you deliberately control them. The other mistake people make is treating savings as something temporary. They save up a little money and then immediately spend it on something they want. The account goes back to zero and they start over. That's not saving. That's delaying a purchase. Real savings stay saved. They're there for emergencies and opportunities, not for buying things you want. If you want something, save separately for it. But your emergency emergency fund should be untouchable, except for actual emergencies. And no, a sale on something you don't need is not an emergency. A new phone when your current one works is not an emergency. A vacation is not an emergency. An emergency is something unexpected that threatens your ability to survive and function. Be honest about what qualifies as an emergency. Most things people raid their savings for aren't emergencies. They're just wants disguised as needs. Here's what having savings does for your mindset. It makes you calm. When you know you have money set aside, you stop operating from fear and desperation. You make better decisions because you're not panicking. You sleep better. You stress less. You feel more in control of your life. That peace of mind is worth more than whatever you gave up to build the savings. Savings also give you leverage in life. You can leave a toxic job because you have a runway to find something better. You can start a business because you have capital and time to build it. You can handle family emergencies without going into debt. You can help people you care about when they're struggling. Without savings, you have none of these options. You're trapped by your circumstances, forced to accept whatever life throws at you. But with savings, you have choices, and choices are what freedom actually looks like. Start building margin today. Cut one unnecessary expense and redirect that money to savings. Find one way to earn a little extra and save all of it. Sell something you don't need and put the money aside. Do whatever it takes to start creating space between your income and your expenses. That space is where security lives. That space is where opportunity lives. That space is where your future wealth begins. The person with no savings is always one problem away from disaster. The person with savings is prepared for problems and ready for opportunities. Which person do you want to be? The action to take today. Open a separate savings account if you don't have one. Transfer something into it, even if it's just $10. Then commit to adding to it regularly, no matter what. Your margin is your power. Start building it now. Rule 18. Good character. You can lose money and make it back. You can fail at a business and start another. You can make mistakes and recover from them. But if you lose your reputation, you lose everything. Your reputation is the most valuable asset you'll ever own. It opens doors, creates opportunities, and attracts the right people. It's also fragile, built slowly over years, but destroyed quickly with one bad decision. This is the rule of good character. Your reputation is everything. Think about who you do business with, who you hire, who you partner with, who you recommend to others. You choose people you trust, people with good reputations, people known for keeping their word, delivering quality, and treating others fairly. You avoid people with bad reputations, no matter how talented they are or how good their prices might be. Because reputation signals risk. A bad reputation means you can't trust them, and business without trust is too expensive and stressful. The same is true for you. People are watching. They're forming opinions about your character based on how you handle money, how you treat others, whether you keep your promises, and how you behave when things go wrong. Every interaction is either building your reputation or damaging it. Every decision is either proving you're trustworthy or showing you're not. There's no neutral ground. Pay people on time. Every time, even when it's inconvenient, even when cash is tight, even when you could probably get away with being late, your reputation for paying promptly is worth more than the temporary float of holding on to money a few extra days. Keep your promises. If you say you'll do something, do it. If you can't do it, communicate early and honestly. Don't make excuses. Don't ghost people. Don't leave people wondering if you'll follow through. The person who keeps their word becomes rare and valuable. Everyone wants to work with them because they know what to expect. Opportunities flow to them because they're reliable. Deliver more than you promise. Under-promise and over-deliver is more than just a saying. It's a reputation-building strategy. If you say you'll have something done by Friday, finish it by Thursday. If you commit to a certain quality, exceed it. Make people glad they chose you. Admit mistakes quickly. Don't hide them. Don't blame others. Don't make excuses. Just own it. Apologize if necessary, and fix it. People respect honesty and accountability. They lose respect for people who can't admit when they're wrong. Treat everyone with respect, not just people who can help you. Everyone. The way you treat waiters, assistants, janitors, and people who can't do anything for you reveals your true character, and people notice. The receptionist you were rude to might become a decision maker at the company you want to work with. The junior employee you dismissed might become your boss someday. The person you ignored might turn out to be connected to everyone you want to meet. You never know who's watching or who might matter later. More importantly, how you treat people when there's nothing to gain shows who you really are. Character isn't what you do when people are watching. It's what you do when nobody's watching. Don't cheat. Don't steal. Don't lie. not even small lies, not even when you think you can get away with it, not even when everyone else is doing it. The temporary gain is never worth the permanent damage to your reputation. Eventually, things come out. The lie gets discovered. The shortcut gets exposed. The corner you cut catches up to you. And when that happens, the damage is often irreversible. People have long memories for betrayal. One act of dishonesty can override years of good behavior. Nobody wants to give a second chance to someone who violated their trust. Be generous, but fair. Help people when you can. Share credit. Acknowledge others' contributions. Don't take advantage of people's trust or desperation. Price your services fairly. Don't gouge people just because you can. The person known for fairness attracts opportunity. People want to work with them because they know they won't be taken advantage of. The person known for greed might make money short-term, but loses opportunities long-term. Handle conflicts with integrity. Don't badmouth people behind their backs. Don't burn bridges. Don't seek revenge. Even when you're right and the other person is wrong, handle it with class. You're building a long-term reputation, not winning a short-term argument. The way you handle difficult situations often matters more than how you handle easy ones. Build genuine relationships, not transactional connections. Care about people beyond what they can do for you. Remember details about their lives. Follow up. Show up. Be someone people actually like, not just someone they tolerate because you're useful. Your network is part of your reputation. If you're known as someone who only reaches out when you need something, people avoid you. If you're known as someone who genuinely cares and stays in touch, people want to help you. Reputation compounds, just like money. Each positive interaction builds on the previous ones. Each kept promise reinforces your reliability. Each act of integrity adds to your credibility. Over time, you become known as someone people can trust, and that reputation becomes your most powerful asset. Doors open before you knock. People want to work with you. Opportunities find you instead of you having to chase them. But it only takes one major breach of trust to destroy what took years to build. Guard your character like your life depends on it, because financially, it does. In the long run, the people with the best reputations win. They get the best opportunities, the best partnerships, the best deals, not because they're the smartest or most talented, but because people trust them. Be that person. Build that reputation. Protect it fiercely. The question to ask yourself, if someone who knows me well was asked to describe my character and integrity, what would they say? Be honest. If the answer isn't what you want it to be, start changing it today. Your reputation is being written right now with every decision you make. Rule 19. Rolling with change. The world changes. Markets shift. Industries evolve. Technology disrupts. What worked yesterday might not work tomorrow. What made you money last year might be obsolete next year. You can complain about it, resist it, and cling to the old ways. Or you can adapt, evolve, and thrive. The choice determines whether you survive or become irrelevant. This is the rule of rolling with change. Bend so you don't break. Look at history. Every industry that refused to adapt eventually died or became irrelevant. Blockbuster ignored streaming and went bankrupt while Netflix thrived. Taxi companies fought against ride-sharing apps and lost. Newspapers resisted digital and watched their industry collapse. The pattern is always the same. Change happens. Some people see it coming and adapt. Others deny it, fight it, or ignore it until it's too late. The ones who adapt survive and often prosper. The ones who resist get left behind. This applies to your career, your business, your income, everything. Whatever you're doing to make money right now will eventually need to evolve. The only question is whether you'll evolve with it or get replaced by someone who did. Your job might be automated. Your industry might shrink. Your skills might become less valuable. New competitors might emerge. Customer preferences might shift. Economic conditions might change. None of this is personal. It's just reality. The market doesn't care about your feelings or your history or how hard you worked to get where you are. It only cares about value and relevance. So you need to stay relevant. You need to keep learning. You need to watch trends. You need to be willing to pivot when necessary. This doesn't mean chasing every shiny object or changing direction every week. That's being scattered, not adaptable. It means paying attention to what's actually changing in your field and being willing to adjust your approach when the evidence is clear. The key is being flexible in your methods while staying consistent in your goals. Your goal might be financial independence. Your method might be real estate. But if the real estate market fundamentally changes, you need to be willing to adjust your strategy or even consider different investment vehicles. People who get stuck are usually holding on too tightly to one specific way of doing things. They've found something that works, and they build their entire identity around it. When circumstances change and that method stops working, they're lost because they can't imagine doing things differently. Don't be that person. Be someone who's always learning, always testing, always aware of what's shifting around you. Watch for warning signs. Is your industry talking about disruption? Are young people entering the field doing things differently? Are customers complaining about things that never bothered them before? Are competitors emerging with new approaches? These are signals. They're telling you that change is coming, maybe already here. You can ignore them and hope you're wrong. Or you can prepare and adapt before you're forced to. The people who thrive during change are usually the ones who saw it coming and prepared. They developed new skills before the old ones became obsolete. They diversified their income before their main source dried up. They built relationships in new areas before they needed them. They weren't smarter or luckier. They were just paying attention and willing to act on what they saw. This also means being willing to let go of what's not working anymore. Maybe you built a business model that thrived for years, but now it's struggling. You can keep pushing, hoping it will turn around. Or you can honestly assess whether the fundamentals have changed and whether it's time to pivot. Letting go is hard. You've invested time, money, and emotion. You have an identity tied to it. Walking away feels like failure, but sometimes letting go is the smartest thing you can do. It frees up resources and energy to pursue what's actually working now instead of what used to work. Think of adaptation as survival, not surrender. You're not giving up. You're doing what's necessary to keep moving forward. The oak tree is strong and rigid. When the storm comes, it breaks. The bamboo is flexible. It bends with the wind and survives. Be bamboo. This also applies to your mindset about money. Economic conditions change. What made sense financially in one decade might not make sense in the next. Interest rates change. Inflation changes. Tax laws change. Investment opportunities shift. You need to be willing to adjust your financial strategies based on current conditions, not outdated assumptions. The person who learned about investing in the 1980s and never updated their approach is making decisions based on a world that no longer exists. Stay current. Read, learn. Talk to people who are succeeding in the current environment. Find out what's actually working now, not what used to work. But don't panic with every change either. There's a difference between adapting strategically and reacting emotionally. Not every trend matters. Not every change requires immediate action. Some things are noise, others are signals. Develop the wisdom to know the difference. Ask yourself, is this a fundamental shift or temporary volatility? Is this affecting the core of what I do or just the surface? Will this matter in 5 years, or is it just current drama? Make measured adjustments based on real information, not fearful reactions based on headlines. The most successful people aren't the ones who never face change. They're the ones who face change constantly and have learned to navigate it effectively. They've built change into their expectations. They've made flexibility part of their strategy. They know that the only constant is change itself, so they stay light on their feet, ready to move when necessary, willing to evolve without losing sight of their ultimate goals. That's the mindset you need to build wealth that lasts. Not rigid adherence to one path, but flexible pursuit of your destination, willing to take different routes as conditions change. Be water, flow around obstacles, adapt to the shape of the container. Keep moving forward no matter what. The action to take this week: identify one thing in your field or industry that's changing. Then figure out one way you can adapt to or capitalize on that change. Change is coming whether you're ready or not. Prepare now. Adapt continuously. Thrive through whatever comes. Rule 20. Staying focused. Everyone wants to get rich quick. They jump from opportunity to opportunity, chasing whatever looks promising this week. They start 10 things and finish nothing. They spread themselves so thin that nothing gets their full attention. And they wonder why nothing works. This is the rule of staying focused. Do one thing well, not many things poorly. Success doesn't come from doing 1,000 things adequately. It comes from doing a few things exceptionally well. From mastering something instead of dabbling in everything. From going deep instead of wide. Think about the most successful people you know. They're not scattered. They're focused. They identified something worth pursuing, and they went all in. They became excellent at it. They built expertise, reputation, and results in one area before expanding to others. The scattered person knows a little about everything and masters nothing. They're a jack of all trades and master of none. They have surface-level understanding, but no deep expertise. And the market doesn't pay well for surface-level anything. Deep expertise is rare and valuable. Surface knowledge is common and cheap. Here's what happens when you lack focus. You make progress in multiple directions, but breakthrough in none. You're always beginning, never mastering. You have a dozen half-finished projects and zero completed successes. You're busy, but not effective. Meanwhile, the focused person is making real progress. They're building momentum in one direction. They're developing expertise that compounds. They're creating results that lead to more opportunities in that same area. They're becoming known for something specific instead of being forgettable generalists. This doesn't mean you can't have multiple interests or income streams, but it means you build them sequentially, not simultaneously. Master one thing first, get it producing results, then add something else if you want. Most people do the opposite. They try to start 5 businesses at once. They try to learn 10 skills simultaneously. They pursue every opportunity that crosses their path. And they achieve nothing because their attention is divided. Focus is a superpower. When you concentrate your energy, time, and resources on one thing, you create force. You break through obstacles that would stop someone who's scattered. You make progress that's visible and meaningful. Think about sunlight. Spread across a lawn, it warms the grass. Focused through a magnifying glass, it starts a fire. Same energy, completely different result. That's what focus does. The problem is that focus requires saying no, a lot, to good opportunities, not just bad ones. 2 interesting ideas. To requests for your time and attention. To distractions disguised as priorities. Every yes to something off focus is a no to your main priority. Every hour spent on side projects is an hour not spent on what really matters. Every distraction is stealing progress from your primary goal. You need to be ruthless about protecting your focus. Identify what actually matters most to your financial success right now. Then make that your obsession. Give it your best time, your best energy, your most consistent attention. Everything else becomes secondary at best, eliminated at worst. This is hard because we live in a culture that celebrates busy. People wear their packed schedules as badges of honor. They brag about juggling multiple projects. They convince themselves that more is always better, but more usually means mediocre. Doing fewer things means you can do them well, and excellence creates far more value than mediocrity ever could. Look at your current situation honestly. How many things are you trying to do? How many goals are you pursuing? How many projects are you juggling? How many directions are you moving? If the answer is more than 2 or 3, you're probably too scattered. You need to cut. Eliminate the things that aren't essential. Finish or abandon projects that aren't producing results. Say no to new opportunities that don't align with your primary focus. This feels like you're limiting yourself. It feels like you're missing out. But you're not. You're creating the conditions for breakthrough instead of spinning your wheels in mediocrity. Focus also means finishing what you start. Too many people are addicted to starting. They love the excitement of new projects, new ideas, new possibilities, but they lose interest once the hard work begins. They have a trail of unfinished projects behind them. Each one represents wasted time, money, and energy. If they had just finished one, they'd have results to show for their effort. Instead, they have nothing but excuses. Start fewer things. Finish more things. Build a track record of completion instead of a graveyard of abandoned attempts. Focus also requires patience. Results take time. Expertise takes time. Success takes time. But if you keep switching directions, you never give anything enough time to work. You try something for 3 months, don't see massive results, and jump to something else. You repeat this pattern for years, always starting over, never building on previous progress. Meanwhile, someone focused stays with their chosen path for 3 years. They push through the difficult middle period where progress is slow. They persist past the point where you quit, and eventually they break through while you're still searching for the next thing to try. Commit to something worth doing, then stay committed long enough to see it through. Don't mistake lack of focus for flexibility. Don't confuse scattered for diversified. Don't call quitting pivoting. Choose your focus carefully. Make sure it's something that aligns with your strengths, interests, and market demand. But once you choose, commit fully. Give it everything you've got for a meaningful period of time. One focused year will produce more results than 10 scattered years ever could. Block out the noise. Ignore the shiny objects. Say no to distractions. Protect your attention like your wealth depends on it. Because it does. The person who can focus in a world of distraction has an enormous advantage. Everyone else is scattered. If you can go deep while they stay shallow, if you can persist while they quit, if you can master while they dabble, you win. Not because you're smarter or more talented, because you focused when everyone else was scattered. The action to take today. Write down everything you're currently trying to do or achieve. Then circle the 1 or 2 things that matter most. Eliminate or postpone everything else. Focus is your weapon. Use it. Rule 21. Betting on yourself. You'll invest in stocks, real estate, cryptocurrencies, and businesses. You'll spend money on cars, clothes, entertainment, and things you don't need. But when it comes to investing in yourself, you hesitate. You won't spend money on a course that could change your career. You won't hire a coach who could accelerate your growth. You won't buy the book or take the training or develop the skill that could multiply your income. Why? Because you don't see yourself as your best investment. But you should, because you are. This is the rule of betting on yourself. Invest in your own growth. Everything you have came from you. Your income is a direct result of your skills, knowledge, and abilities. Your opportunities come from your network and reputation. Your results come from your actions and decisions. Improve yourself, and everything else improves. Invest in yourself, and everything else benefits. You are the asset that produces all other assets. Think about it. A stock might go up or down. Real estate might appreciate or depreciate. But an investment in yourself, in your skills and knowledge, pays dividends forever. Nobody can take it away from you. It goes wherever you go. It compounds over your entire life. You spend $1,000 on a course that teaches you how to negotiate better. That skill could help you get a $10,000 raise. It could save you thousands on purchases over the years. It could help you close deals worth hundreds of thousands. One skill, endless returns. But most people won't spend the $1,000. They'll spend it on a vacation that lasts a week, or clothes that go out of style, or electronics that depreciate immediately. They'll invest in things that lose value instead of in themselves who gain value. This is backwards thinking. The person who invests in developing valuable skills will always have income opportunities. The person who only invests in consumption will always need to work harder for the same results. Investing in yourself takes many forms. Education is one. Books, courses, workshops, certifications, degrees, anything that gives you knowledge or credentials that increase your value in the marketplace. But don't confuse education with schooling. School is just one form of education and often not the most efficient. A $300 course from an expert in your field might teach you more useful information in a weekend than a $30,000 degree teaches in a year. The key is learning things that directly apply to creating value and earning money. Not learning for learning's sake, but strategic education that builds capabilities you can monetize. Coaching and mentorship is another form of self-investment. Someone who's been where you want to go can compress years of trial and error into months of focused action. They can help you avoid mistakes, recognize opportunities, and make better decisions. Yes, good coaches are expensive. That's the point. They're expensive because they create value that far exceeds their cost. The person too cheap to pay for coaching wastes years and money learning lessons the hard way. Investing in your health is investing in yourself. You can't build wealth if you're sick, exhausted, or dead. Your body and mind are the engines that create everything else. Take care of them. Eat well. Exercise. Sleep enough. Manage stress. Get regular checkups. These aren't luxuries. Their maintenance on your most important asset, you. The person who destroys their health to make money will eventually spend all their money trying to restore their health. Don't be that person. Invest in staying healthy while you're healthy. Investing in your appearance and presentation matters too. Fair or not, people judge you based on how you look and present yourself. Investment in looking professional, in dressing well for important situations, in grooming and presentation isn't vanity. It's understanding that opportunities often go to people who look the part. You don't need designer everything, but you need to present yourself in a way that makes people take you seriously. That's not shallow. That's strategic. Investing in your network is investing in yourself. Attend conferences, join professional groups, buy lunch for people you want to learn from. Invest time and money in building genuine relationships with successful people. Your network determines your net worth more than you probably realize. The right connection can open doors that no amount of hard work could open. The right introduction can create opportunities worth millions. The right relationships can teach you what books never could, but you have to invest in building those relationships, and that requires time, effort, and often money. Tools and resources that make you more effective are self-investments too. The right software, equipment, or services can multiply your productivity. If a tool saves you 10 hours a week, what's that worth? If it helps you produce better work, what's that worth? Most people are penny-wise and pound-foolish with tools. They'll waste hours doing things manually to save $50 on a tool that would automate it. They value the money more than their time, which is backwards. Your time is your most valuable resource. Anything that gives you more time or makes your time more productive is a good investment. Here's the mindset shift you need. Stop seeing money spent on yourself as an expense. Start seeing it as an investment with expected returns. Before you spend money on self-improvement, ask yourself, how will this investment pay back? If you can't articulate a clear path to returns, maybe it's not the right investment right now. But if you can see how it will increase your income, improve your results, or create new opportunities, make the investment. The wealthy think this way instinctively. They constantly invest in themselves because they know it's the highest return investment available. They don't hesitate to spend money on anything that makes them more capable, more knowledgeable, more connected, or more effective. Poor people only see the cost. They never calculate the return. So they stay where they are while wealthy people keep pulling ahead. Don't wait until you have extra money to invest in yourself. Invest in yourself so you'll have extra money. Make it a priority, not an afterthought. If you had to choose between putting $1,000 in stocks or putting it toward a skill that could increase your income, which is the better investment? The skill will almost always win because you control the outcome. Bet on yourself. Invest in your growth. Develop capabilities that create value. Build yourself into an asset that produces wealth reliably. That's the investment that never fails. The action to take this week. Identify one skill, course, book, or resource that could significantly increase your value. Then buy it and use it. You're your best investment. Start treating yourself that way. Rule 22, helping first. Most people approach money with their hand out. They want to know what they can get, what's in it for them, how much they'll be paid, what benefits they'll receive. They lead with taking instead of giving, and they wonder why opportunities don't come their way. This is the rule of helping first. Give value before asking for anything. The people who build real wealth understand a simple truth. You have to give before you can receive. You have to create value before you can capture value. You have to help people before they'll help you. Think about how most people network. They show up to events looking for what they can get. They collect business cards. They pitch their services. They ask for favors. They're takers, disguised as networkers. Then there's the person who shows up differently. They ask how they can help. They make introductions. They share information. They offer value without expecting immediate returns. They're givers. Who do you think people want to work with? Who do you think gets called when opportunities arise? The taker or the giver? The giver wins every single time. This isn't just about being nice. It's about understanding how value exchange actually works. When you help someone first, you create goodwill. You build trust. You demonstrate your capabilities. You make them want to reciprocate. They remember who helped them when they needed it. And when they're in a position to return the favor, they do. Not because they owe you, but because they want to. Because you made their life better, and they want to make yours better too. This is how the most valuable relationships and opportunities are built. Not through transactions, but through genuine help freely given. But here's where most people go wrong. They give with strings attached. They help, but they're keeping score. They're waiting for the immediate payback. And if it doesn't come quickly, they feel resentful and stop giving. That's transactional, not generous. Real giving has no expectation of immediate return. You help because you can, because it's the right thing to do, because you want to add value to someone's life. And paradoxically, that's when the returns are greatest. When you give freely without expectation, people feel it. They know the difference between someone who's genuinely helpful and someone who's angling for something. This applies in business too. The best way to sell isn't to pitch. It's to help first. Solve a problem for free. Offer valuable information. Make someone's life easier. Then, when they need more help, you're the obvious choice. Think about content creators who give away massive value for free. Books, videos, articles, courses. They're helping thousands or millions of people without charging anything. And in return, they build audiences, credibility, and eventually multiple income streams. They gave first. The money followed. Compare that to the person who hoards knowledge, who won't share anything unless they're paid, who sees every interaction as a transaction. They might make some money, but they never build the kind of loyalty, trust, and opportunities that generous people attract. This also applies to your work. Don't just do what's required. Go above and beyond. Deliver more value than you're paid for. Make your boss, your clients, your customers glad they chose you. Will some people take advantage of this? Yes. Will you occasionally help people who never reciprocate? Absolutely. That's fine. You're not giving to those specific people. You're building a reputation and a pattern of behavior that attracts the right people. The takers will take and leave. Let them go. The right people, the givers, the builders, the people going somewhere, will notice what you do and want to work with you. Your job is to be so helpful, so valuable, so generous with your expertise, that opportunities seek you out, instead of you chasing them. Share what you know, make introductions, offer advice, solve problems, connect people who should know each other, teach, mentor, help without being asked. But be strategic about it. Don't give away so much that you can't sustain yourself. Don't help people who are just using you. Don't sacrifice your own progress to help people who won't help themselves. Give intelligently, not indiscriminately. Help people who are actually trying, people who appreciate it, people who are going somewhere. Your generosity should amplify good work, not enable laziness. And when you do ask for something, you'll find that people are willing to help, because you've built up goodwill, because they remember how you helped them, because they want to reciprocate. The person who only asks but never gives has no deposits in the bank of goodwill. When they need help, nobody's there. The person who constantly gives has so much goodwill built up that opportunities and assistance flow to them naturally. This is how wealth is built in the modern world. Not by hoarding and taking, but by creating and sharing value. Not by asking what you can get, but by delivering what people need. Lead with help. Give before you ask. Create value before you capture it. Serve before you sell. Do this consistently, and the money will follow. Maybe not immediately. Maybe not from the people you directly helped, but it will follow. Because the universe, or human nature if you prefer, tends to reward generous people who create value. The takers might win short term, but the givers win long term. Every single time. The action to take this week. Help someone with no expectation of return. Make an introduction. Share valuable information. Solve a problem. Offer advice. Just help. Start building the habit of giving first. Your wealth will grow from it. Rule 23. Long-term vision. Most people think in days and weeks. What can I get today? What feels good right now? What's the quick win? They make decisions based on immediate gratification, immediate problems, immediate desires, and then they wonder why their lives never improve in any meaningful way. This is the rule of long-term vision. Think in decades, not days. The wealthy think differently about time. They make decisions today based on where they want to be in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. They sacrifice short-term comfort for long-term freedom. They invest in things that won't pay off for years because they know those are the investments that matter most. Think about planting an oak tree. For the first few years, it's just a sapling. It provides no shade, no beauty, no value you can see. Someone focused on the short term would cut it down and plant flowers instead. Instant gratification, instant results. But the person with long-term vision waters that sapling, protects it, nurtures it, and 20 years later, they have a massive tree providing shade, beauty, and value that the flower planter will never have. That's the difference between short-term and long-term thinking. Every major accomplishment in your life will require long-term thinking. Building wealth takes years. Building a business takes years. Building expertise takes years. Building a reputation takes years. Building anything worthwhile takes years. But people want it now. They want the wealth without the waiting, the success without the struggle, the results without the time investment, so they chase shortcuts that lead nowhere. Meanwhile, someone else is patiently building, day after day, year after year, not getting distracted by quick wins or instant gratification, just consistently working towards something that won't fully materialize for a decade. That person will lap you. They'll build wealth while you're still searching for the next quick opportunity. They'll achieve what seems impossible to you because they were willing to think longer term than you were. Here's what long-term thinking looks like in practice. You choose the boring, consistent investment over the exciting gamble. You build skills that compound over decades rather than chasing whatever's hot right now. You make career decisions based on where they lead in 10 years, not what they pay next month. You sacrifice the new car today because you'd rather have financial independence in 15 years. You skip the expensive vacation this year because you're building a life where you can travel anytime you want. You live below your means now so you can live far above them later. Short-term thinkers look at you like you're crazy. They don't understand why you're not enjoying life now. They think you're too serious, too focused on the future, missing out on today. But you understand something? They don't. True enjoyment comes from security, freedom, and options, and those things only come from long-term thinking and delayed gratification. The person living for today will still be living for today 20 years from now. Same struggles, same limitations, same paycheck-to-paycheck existence, because they never invested in tomorrow. You, on the other hand, will be living the life they wish they had, because you were willing to wait. because you thought long-term when they thought short-term. Long-term thinking also protects you from panic. When markets crash, short-term thinkers sell everything and lock in losses. Long-term thinkers stay calm, because they know this is just one moment in a multi-decade plan. They might even buy more, because prices are low. When businesses struggle, short-term thinkers give up. Long-term thinkers push through because they expected challenges and planned for them. They're building something that will last, not looking for quick money. When careers hit setbacks, short-term thinkers quit and start over. Long-term thinkers see it as one chapter in a longer story. They learn, adapt, and keep building toward their ultimate goal. The key to long-term thinking is having a clear vision of where you're going. If you don't know what you're building toward, you can't make good long-term decisions. Everything feels urgent and immediate because you have no context. But when you have a clear vision, financial independence by 50, a business that employs 100 people, enough passive income to never worry about money, then daily decisions become easier. You simply ask, does this move me closer to my long-term goal or further away? That expensive purchase? Further away. That investment in your education? Closer. That job that pays more but leads nowhere? Further away. That job that pays less but builds valuable skills? Closer. With a long-term vision, short-term sacrifices don't feel like sacrifices. They feel like investments. You're not giving things up. You're trading temporary discomfort for permanent improvement. Most people never develop this vision. They drift through life reacting to whatever happens, making decisions based on what feels right in the moment, never building toward anything specific. And they end up nowhere specific, just older and wondering where the time went. Don't be that person. Choose a destination. A real one. Something specific enough that you can plan for it. Something far enough in the future that you have to think long-term to achieve it. Then, make every decision through that lens. Not what feels good today, but what serves your 20-year plan. Not what's easy now, but what pays off later. This is hard. Your brain is wired for immediate rewards. Your environment constantly tempts you with short-term pleasures. Your friends and family might not understand why you're not living like they are. But you understand, you're playing a different game, a longer game, a better game, and when you win, and you will win if you stay focused, it won't be because you were luckier or smarter than everyone else. It will be because you thought longer term than they did. You planted oak trees while they planted flowers, and now you have shade while they're still searching for it. The action to take today, write down where you want to be financially in 10 years. Be specific. Then write down one thing you can start doing today that will move you toward that goal, even if the results won't show up for years. Then start doing it, every day, for years. That's how wealth is built. That's how dreams become reality. One long-term decision at a time. Rule 24. Being happy with enough. You finally get the promotion, the raise, the business success, the investment returns. You reach the number you thought would make you happy. And then what happens? The goalpost moves. Suddenly that number isn't enough anymore. You need more. A bigger house. A better car. A larger bank account. More. 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 You're on a treadmill that never stops. No matter how much you make, it's never enough. You're always chasing. Always wanting. Always feeling like you're falling short. This is the final rule. And perhaps the most important. Know when you have plenty. All the other rules in this book are about building wealth. This one is about knowing why you're building it and when you can stop chasing and start enjoying. Because here's the truth that nobody tells you. More money won't make you happy if you don't know what enough looks like. The hedge fund manager making $10 million a year is stressed about not making $20 million. The entrepreneur with $50 million wants $100 million. The billionaire wants to be on a different part of the billionaire list. There's always someone richer, always another level, always more to achieve. And if you tie your happiness to hitting the next level, you'll never be happy. You'll just be exhausted. This doesn't mean you shouldn't be ambitious. It doesn't mean you should settle for poverty or stop growing. It means you need to define what enough actually means for you. How much money do you actually need to live the life you want, not the life you think you should want? Not the life that would impress other people, the life that would actually make you content. For some people, that's a modest house, reliable transportation, the ability to pay bills without stress, and enough extra for occasional experiences. That might require $75,000 a year. Maybe $100,000, depending on where you live. For others, it's more. Private schools for kids, international travel, a second home, supporting aging parents. That might require $200,000, $500,000 or more. The number doesn't matter. What matters is that you define it clearly. Because if you don't, you'll chase forever and arrive nowhere. Once you hit your number, once you have enough to live the life you actually want, everything changes. You're no longer operating from fear or desperation. You're free to make decisions based on what matters to you instead of what pays most. You can take the job you love even if it pays less than the job you hate. You can start the business that interests you without risking your family's security. You can say no to opportunities that don't align with your values. You can spend time with people you love instead of always chasing the next dollar. That's what wealth actually buys. Freedom. Not things. Not status. Freedom. But most people never experience this freedom because they never define enough. They just keep accumulating, competing, comparing. They die rich and miserable, having spent their whole lives chasing what they already had. Don't be that person. Build wealth, yes. Follow all the rules in this book. Become financially successful. But know why you're doing it and what it's for. Money is a tool, not a destination. It's meant to create a life worth living, not to be hoarded endlessly as a scoreboard. The wealthiest people aren't the ones with the most money. They're the ones who have enough and know it. They're content. They're grateful. They've escaped the comparison trap and the hedonic treadmill. They still work, still create, still contribute. But they're doing it from a place of choice and fulfillment, not desperation and inadequacy. This also means appreciating what you have right now, not just waiting until you hit some future number to start being grateful. Finding contentment in the journey, not just the destination. You can want more and be grateful for what you have simultaneously. You can work toward bigger goals while appreciating your current blessings. You can be ambitious and content at the same time. In fact, that's the healthiest mindset. Driven, but not desperate. Growing, but not grasping. Building, but not broken. Watch out for lifestyle inflation. As your income grows, your expenses will try to grow with it. The bigger house, the luxury car, the expensive habits. Before you know it, you're making 3 times what you used to make, and you're just as stressed about money as you were before. That's not progress. That's a trap. Let your income grow faster than your expenses. Let the gap between what you make and what you spend widen over time. That gap is your freedom, your security, your peace of mind. Also, be wary of comparison. Social media makes this worse than ever. You're constantly seeing other people's highlight reels, their purchases, their vacations, their accomplishments. It's easy to feel like you're falling behind, even when you're doing well. Remember, their life is not your life. Their goals are not your goals. Their definition of success is not yours. Run your own race. Define your own enough. The person trying to keep up with everyone else will never have enough. There's always someone ahead. Always someone with more. Always another benchmark to hit. But the person who knows their own definition of enough can achieve it, can live it, can experience the peace and freedom that money is supposed to provide. This is the ultimate financial skill. Knowing when you've won, knowing when the game is over, knowing when you have enough and being content with that instead of immediately starting a new, bigger game. Build wealth. Follow these 24 rules. Become financially successful. But do it so you can live the life you actually want. Not so you can impress people you don't even like with things you don't even need. At the end of your life, you won't regret not having more money. You'll regret not appreciating the money you had, not using it to create the experiences and relationships that actually mattered, not knowing when you had enough and being grateful for it. Start building your wealth today, but also define what enough looks like. Then when you get there, have the wisdom to recognize it and the contentment to enjoy it. That's true prosperity. Not just having money, having enough, and knowing it. The final question to ask yourself, what does enough actually look like for me? What amount of money would allow me to live the life I truly want without constant stress or striving? Answer honestly. Then work toward that number with everything you've learned in this book. And when you get there, stop chasing and start living. You'll have won. Final rule, you made it. You now know the 24 rules that control money, the same rules wealthy people follow, the same principles that have created fortunes for hundreds of years and will continue working for hundreds more. But knowing isn't enough. You've always known you should save more, spend less, invest wisely. Everyone knows these things. Knowledge without action is just entertainment. So here's what matters now. What will you do differently starting today? Will you close this book, feel inspired for a few hours, and then go back to your old habits? Or will you actually change? Because that's the real test. Not whether you understood the rules. Whether you'll follow them. The rules work. But only if you do. These aren't theories. They're proven principles. Solve problems. Be patient. Take small steps consistently. Build multiple income streams. Take smart risks. Keep learning. Surround yourself with the right people. Give generously. Take responsibility. Protect your energy. Understand what people want. Work smarter. Learn from failures. Speak up. Master money basics. Follow your purpose. Keep savings. Guard your reputation. Adapt to change. Stay focused. Bet on yourself. Help first. Think long term. Know when enough is enough. 24 simple rules. Nothing complicated. Nothing impossible. Just clear principles that anyone can follow. The question is, will you? Most people won't. They'll read this book, nod along, maybe highlight a few passages, and then do nothing. They'll return to the same financial habits that kept them stuck. They'll make the same mistakes. They'll stay in the same place. But you're not most people. You wouldn't have read this far if you were. You're someone who wants more. Someone who's ready to change. Someone who understands that your financial future is being created right now by the choices you make today. So make different choices. Starting now. Your first step. Don't try to implement all 24 rules at once. That's overwhelming and you'll quit. Instead, pick one rule. Just one. The one that resonated most with you. The one you know would make the biggest difference in your life right now. Maybe it's rule two. Be patient. Start delaying purchases and building savings. Maybe it's rule six. Keep learning. Commit to reading about money for 30 minutes every day. Maybe it's rule 14. Speak up. Finally ask for that raise you deserve. Maybe it's rule 17. Keep extra. Start building an emergency fund today. Whatever rule you choose, commit to it completely. Master it. Make it a habit. Let it transform that area of your financial life. Then, once it's solid, add another rule. Then another. Build your wealth one principle at a time. That's how real change happens. Not through dramatic transformations, but through consistent application of proven principles. 5 years from now. Imagine yourself 5 years from today. If you do nothing different, where will you be financially? Probably in the same place you are now. Maybe worse. Definitely not significantly better. But if you apply these rules, if you commit to changing your relationship with money, if you follow these principles consistently for 5 years, you'll be unrecognizable. Your bank account will look different. Your opportunities will be different. Your stress level will be different. Your entire life will be different. 5 years will pass whether you take action or not. The only question is what you'll have built during that time, or not. The only question is what you'll have built during that time.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you...
The Secret Law of Effortless Wealth. Introduction. The world still worships sweat. We were taught that the harder we grind, the more we earn. That fortune lives in long hours and aching hands. Factories once roared with that belief, steam rising like burnt offerings to the god of labor. Men and women worked until their backs broke, convinced that effort itself was virtue. And yet, the truth, the one almost no one dared to whisper, is this. Money has never come from work. It comes from alignment. The invisible hand that moves gold and opportunity through this world does not respond to exhaustion. It responds to vibration, to the silent frequency of thought held with faith. A century ago, a quiet man named Wallace D. Wattles discovered this truth and wrote it in words so simple that few believed him. He said, "You do not get rich by doing certain things, but by doing things in a certain way." That certain way is what you're about to remember. For generations, humanity has been hypnotized by the myth of labor. We call it productivity, progress, the noble grind. But beneath those words hides a cruel misunderstanding, the belief that value is external, that money is earned from the outside in. Look around. The world's wealthiest are not always the hardest working. Some move through life with ease, while others toil endlessly and still sink into lack. Why? Because Wattles revealed what every mystic before him hinted at, that wealth is mental causation, not physical struggle. There is, he wrote, a thinking substance, an intelligent, creative field that fills the universe. Whatever form you hold in your mind with faith and gratitude, this substance begins to shape into reality. To most, this sounds impossible, yet all around us, nature obeys this same law. Every seed reproduces its kind. Thought is the seed of circumstance, and when your inner vibration matches the frequency of wealth, wealth cannot help but appear, through channels known and unknown. Think of your own life. How many times have you worked tirelessly, only to find doors closed? And how many times have you simply known something would work? And it did, almost effortlessly. That quiet knowing is alignment. That is the certain way Wattles spoke of. The fusion of clear mental image, unwavering faith, and grateful action. He warned, "The moment you abandon the idea that money comes through toil, you begin to work in partnership with the universe. The moment you stop pushing, life starts flowing, but to reach that point you must confront an ancient fear, the terror of letting go of struggle. The mind whispers, 'If I stop fighting, I'll lose everything.' Yet the opposite is true. The fight itself is what keeps you poor. Here is the law, as Wattles understood it. There exists a formless substance that responds to thought. A clear mental picture of abundance impressed upon this substance causes its manifestation. Gratitude keeps you connected to this infinite source. Action, guided by faith, gives the invisible a channel through which to flow. This is divine mechanics, the metaphysics of creation. When you align your thoughts with faith instead of fear, and your work with joy instead of duty, you step into the current of effortless wealth. Then, work transforms from toil to expression, from trying to make a living to allowing life to make through you. Every act done with awareness of abundance magnetizes an increase. Every word spoken with gratitude multiplies substance. Every moment lived in certainty strengthens your link to the infinite storehouse. You are not here to earn, you are here to emanate. Imagine standing in that ancient factory again, but this time you see what the others could not. Behind the machines, beyond the sweat and noise, there is a quiet field of light, pure creative intelligence waiting to obey whoever dares to think differently. You realize the true labor is not of hands, but of consciousness. You no longer chase, you radiate. You no longer beg, you allow. You no longer say, "I must work to earn," but "I work to express the richness already within me." That is the secret of effortless wealth. Not a miracle, but a method. Not mysticism, but alignment with law. As you move into Chapter 1, The Thinking Substance, you'll see how this invisible intelligence has been shaping every event of your life, waiting for your conscious command. When you finally understand it, money ceases to be a struggle. It becomes a mirror. Because from this point on you'll know, you do not earn money, you summon it. Chapter 1, The Thinking Substance, The True Source of Wealth. Long before the first coin was minted, before banks or barter or the invention of trade, there existed something far greater, a living ocean of intelligence that filled the invisible space between all things. Wattles called it the thinking substance. He described it not as an idea, but as a reality, the primal essence from which gold, wheat, bodies, and worlds are shaped. Every tree, every thought, every human destiny arises from this unseen field. He wrote, "There is a thinking stuff from which all things are made, and which, in its original state, permeates, penetrates, and fills the interspaces of the universe. A thought, in this substance, produces the thing that is imaged by the thought. Pause for a moment and imagine that, an intelligent field surrounding you right now, waiting for your instruction. It breathes through your thoughts, hears your emotions, and responds to your certainty. This, not your job or your employer or your hours worked, is the true source of wealth. Humanity forgot this truth when it began to worship matter instead of mind. We learned to chase effects instead of mastering the cause. We began to dig for gold in the outer world, never realizing the gold mine was within. Wattles observed this error in his own era, a world enslaved by industry where men worked 16-hour days, yet remained poor in spirit and pocket alike. He saw that physical labor alone could not explain the prosperity of some and the poverty of others. If money were purely the result of effort, then the hardest workers on earth would be the richest. Yet the opposite is often true. He concluded, there must be a deeper law at play, a metaphysical law of creation, one that links thought to form, vibration to substance, consciousness to cash. The universe, he said, is not a machine but a living mind, and the mind that knows this truth can never truly be poor again. You've been taught to think of wealth as a competition, to believe that what another gains, you must lose. This is the consciousness of scarcity, the competitive mind which Wattles warned against. It breeds fear, jealousy, and separation. But the thinking substance is infinite. It cannot be depleted or cornered by anyone. It creates endlessly from within itself. When you understand that, everything changes. Consider this. Every time you envy another's fortune, you tell the universe, their wealth limits mine. But when you bless their abundance, you affirm, their gain proves mine is possible. The difference is energetic, yet it determines the entire trajectory of your life. Wattles taught that poverty is not a condition of circumstance, but of awareness. It is the result of thinking against the flow of creation, of imagining lack in an infinite field of supply. And once that field receives your thought of lack, it obediently manifests lack in form. You are, right now, surrounded by invisible substance waiting to shape itself into your idea of wealth. The only question is, what image are you impressing upon it? Wattles' discovery is both mystical and practical. He said that to manifest wealth, one must form a clear mental image of the desired result, not vague longing but definite creation. Hold that image with unwavering faith, never doubting its reality. Express gratitude constantly, for gratitude keeps you in touch with the source. Act in a certain way, with purpose, efficiency, and joyful expectation, not strain. This is the true alchemy of wealth. Thought, faith, gratitude, action, manifestation. When you think richly, you magnetize opportunities. When you believe, you command substance to obey. When you act with gratitude, you give the universe permission to deliver. It's not magic, it's law. The law by which the seed becomes a tree and the idea becomes a fortune. Work, then, is not the generator of wealth. It is merely the stage upon which wealth appears. A gardener does not force a plant to grow by effort. He aligns with nature's process. In the same way, your role is not to push reality, but to hold the mental picture so faithfully that reality must yield to it. Think of it. The air you breathe is filled with this thinking substance. Every atom in your body is woven from it. It listens when you speak. It mirrors when you feel. It builds when you believe. When you truly grasp this, you stop begging life for scraps and start commanding it with reverence. You no longer say, I must earn money, but I must think and act in harmony with wealth. This is what Wattles meant by doing things in a certain way, not the way of hustle, but the way of consciousness, calm, deliberate, creative. The rich man is not he who works hardest, but he who works with the laws of the universe instead of against them. As your awareness deepens, you'll begin to feel it, a subtle shift in your energy, a quiet authority that says, all supply moves through me. And in that realization, work becomes sacred, not as a burden, but as a joyous expression of divine creation. In the next chapter, The Illusion of Labor, will dismantle the greatest lie of all, the belief that money is the child of exhaustion. You'll see why struggle repels supply, and how faith, not force, opens the gates of abundance. Because once you understand the nature of the thinking substance, you'll never again mistake effort for power. You'll know the universe doesn't pay for toil. It pays for awareness. Chapter 2. The Illusion of Labor. Why Struggle Repels Supply. Picture the worker at dawn, his breath visible in the cold, his tools heavy in hand. He believes, as most do, that the sweat of his brow is what earns him survival. He wakes, he labors, he sleeps, and he repeats. Generations have done the same. Millions chained to the rhythm of labor, repeating a creed carved into the human psyche. Work harder, and you'll have more. Yet the paradox stands. Some work endlessly and remain poor, while others seem to attract abundance with little visible effort. Why? Because work, as society understands it, is not the cause of wealth. It's the echo of consciousness. The outer world simply mirrors the belief you hold within, and when that belief is in struggle, the universe, obedient as ever, sends you more struggle. Wattles saw it clearly in his time. Factories roaring with exhausted men, fields filled with bent backs, and yet all around him others becoming rich with ease. He dared to say what no industrial man would. It is not by hard work that men get rich, but by doing things in a certain way. That certain way was alignment, the harmonious cooperation between thought, faith, and action. Labor alone, disconnected from faith, becomes friction. Think of a wheel turning against the current. No matter how fast it spins, it makes no progress. That is the illusion of labor, motion mistaken for creation. Most people confuse the two. They run endlessly, chasing what could be magnetized effortlessly if only they would stop running and start aligning. To struggle for money is like trying to grab water with clenched fists. The tighter you hold, the less you have. This is where the illusion becomes dangerous. The world glorifies exhaustion, the grind culture that praises burnout as proof of worth. We wear fatigue like medals of honor and call it discipline, unaware that the frequency of strain is the exact vibration that repels abundance. Wattles warned against this mindset. To think that wealth is the reward of toil is to live in error. It is the result of right thinking and right action. Consider your own experience. Have you ever forced a project, pushing with willpower alone, and watched it collapse? Then remember another time when things simply clicked, when doors opened, when coincidences seemed to conspire in your favor. That's not luck. That's alignment. It's the universe responding to the tone of your energy, not the volume of your effort. The subconscious mind does not understand overwork. It only understands vibration. When your energy says, "I must fight for what I want," it translates that signal literally, "You must fight." And so, life obeys, delivering more conflict, more resistance, more proof that you must fight. But the moment you affirm, "I already possess the wealth of the universe, I merely allow it to take form," the struggle dissolves, and what once required force begins to flow. Here is Wattles' antidote to the illusion of labor, the metaphysical formula for true creation. Think richly. Refuse to think of money as distant or difficult. Every thought of hardship cuts you off from the creative flow. Replace "I must earn" with "I must align." Act calmly. Work with intention, not desperation. Each act must be infused with the awareness that you are a channel for infinite supply. Let your movement be graceful, not frantic, for the infinite never rushes. Rest in faith. After doing all you can in the outer world, release the outcome. Faith is the act of energetic surrender, the proof that you trust the invisible to complete what you began. Live in gratitude. Gratitude keeps your vibration high and your connection open. It is the language of wealth, the heart's acknowledgement that supply is already present. Work then becomes sacred not because of its difficulty, but because of the consciousness behind it. Effort done in fear produces exhaustion. Effort done in faith produces expansion. The difference lies not in what you do, but in who is doing it, the fearful self or the aligned self. The illusion of labor dies the moment you understand this. You were never meant to wrestle with life, you were meant to collaborate with it. The universe is not impressed by struggle. It is moved by coherence. Money is not seduced by exhaustion. It is drawn to calm conviction. When your work becomes an expression of faith instead of fear, the magnetic field around you changes. You begin to notice synchronicities, unexpected clients, effortless promotions, inspired ideas that seem to arrive from nowhere. But they do not come from nowhere. They come from the thinking substance responding to your certainty. Wattles called this acting in the certain way, the ability to move through life knowing that you are not a beggar of the universe, but a participant in its creation. When you work from that awareness, even the smallest act carries the weight of divine energy. You no longer work to earn, you work to express. And expression is effortless. It is the soul's natural state. In the next chapter, the creative versus the competitive mind, we'll explore the greatest fork in human destiny, the choice between the mind that struggles to get and the mind that knows how to create. One lives in fear of loss. The other lives in partnership with infinite supply. And from that choice, between force and flow, every fortune or failure on earth is born. Chapter 3, The Creative versus the Competitive Mind, The Fork in Human Destiny. Two minds move through this world. One sees life as a battlefield, the other sees it as a canvas. One fights for every resource, believing the universe to be stingy and cruel. The other creates effortlessly, knowing the universe to be alive, generous, and infinite. These are the two minds that shape every destiny, the competitive and the creative. Wallace D. Wattles taught that the greatest mistake of mankind is to live in the competitive state of consciousness, to believe that in order for one to win, another must lose. He called it a disease of the race mind. And indeed it is. Competition is the child of fear. And fear is the signal that one has forgotten the truth. There is more than enough for all. Look at the modern world. Nations compete for dominance. Corporations compete for markets. Individuals compete for recognition, for validation, for survival. And yet in that endless chase, no one ever truly wins, because the vibration of competition is separation itself. It tells the universe, I believe in lack. And so, lack becomes the governing law of one's experience. Wattles saw this even in his own century. Men trampling each other in factories, businesses collapsing from greed, dreams dying under the weight of envy. He wrote, The creative mind knows no competition. It creates what it wants without taking away from others. The competitive mind imitates. The creative mind originates. The competitive mind fights for position. The creative mind expands the entire field. And because the creative mind lives in the vibration of increase, the universe rushes to multiply whatever it touches. Ask yourself, which mind governs you? Do you feel joy when others succeed, or do you feel a sting of loss? Do you see wealth as proof of abundance, or as evidence that your share has been taken? Every time you resent another's success, you reinforce the idea that success is scarce, that there isn't enough room for both of you. And the moment you believe that, you unconsciously withdraw from the field of infinite supply and step into the prison of limitation. Competition creates tension, a subtle energetic contraction that tells the thinking substance, I do not have enough. And since this intelligent substance mirrors every dominant belief, it echoes that scarcity back to you in form. Wattles warned that those who live in competition cut themselves off from the source because they are too busy fighting over the fragments of what already exists instead of creating something new. The creative mind, on the other hand, plays a different game entirely. It doesn't steal. It conceives. It doesn't demand. It receives. It doesn't envy. It expands. When you move from competition to creation, the universe stops mirroring your fear and begins amplifying your ideas. So how do you shift from the competitive to the creative state of consciousness? Wattles gave us the steps, though he never used the language of psychology or quantum fields, yet his wisdom predates both. See the infinite everywhere. Begin by replacing the idea of scarcity with one of endless expansion. Every grain of sand, every leaf, every star is proof that the universe overflows. The source creates in excess, so must you. Rejoice in another's success. When you bless the prosperity of others, you signal to the universe, there is enough for me too. In that moment, jealousy dissolves, and your frequency rises to match abundance itself. Create instead of compete. Don't ask, how do I beat them? Ask, what can I build that no one has yet imagined? Every inspired idea that serves life multiplies your supply. Live in the consciousness of increase. Speak, act, and think in ways that make everyone and everything around you grow. To think increase is to tune into the divine heartbeat of creation. Wattles wrote, the creative mind is never anxious. It trusts in the power that works through it. When you create, you operate as an extension of the infinite, and the infinite cannot fail. Imagine the two roads before you. One leads into the noise of the marketplace, shouting, pushing, racing for more. That's the path of competition, loud, frantic, and hollow. The other path is silent, luminous, open like dawn. It's the path of creation, still, confident, unstoppable. The first path ends in exhaustion. The second ends in expansion. You must choose. Wattle's message is timeless because it isn't about business or economics. It's about consciousness. The creative mind is the mind of God expressing through you. And when you think as God thinks, you never need to compete, for you are the source itself in motion. As you move through life, remember this. Whenever you envy, you contract. Whenever you bless, you expand. Whenever you compete, you block the flow. Whenever you create, you open it wide. To create is to agree with life. And when you agree with life, life agrees with you. In the next chapter, The Power of Definite Vision, we'll enter the heart of creation, the sacred act of imagining. You'll see how a single clear mental picture, held with faith, has more creative power than 1,000 days of hard labor. Because when your vision is definite, the universe has no choice but to obey. It's not about working harder. It's about seeing clearer. Chapter 4. The Power of Definite Vision. The imagination that commands reality. Everything that exists began as a picture in someone's mind. Before there was the palace, there was the plan. Before the bridge, the vision. Before the empire, a thought held long enough to call matter into order. Wattles understood this principle so completely that he made it the cornerstone of his system. You must form a clear and definite mental image of what you want. Hold this picture in your thoughts with fixed purpose and unwavering faith, and the thing you think about will be created. To him, imagination was not fantasy. It was divine architecture. When you think vividly and persistently, you are giving the thinking substance its blueprint. The universe does not respond to wishful daydreams. It responds to precision, to the definiteness of an image impressed upon it with emotion and faith. Most people never create. They drift. Their mental pictures flicker and fade with every mood. One day they desire freedom, the next they fear it. Their inner movie keeps changing, so the outer world never knows what to project. Wattles wrote that the average person moves as a ship without a chart or compass, tossed by conditions instead of commanding them. They pray for prosperity while imagining lack, speak of faith while vibrating fear, act with hope one moment and despair the next, and then they wonder why life feels inconsistent. A definite vision acts like gravity. It gathers the formless into form. An indefinite mind scatters its own power. Without a clear picture, the universe has nothing to obey. Energy answers direction, not confusion. Ask yourself, what image do I hold most clearly in my mind? Not what you wish you thought about, but what you actually revisit day after day. Is it abundance or anxiety? Is it freedom or the fear of failure? Every repeating image is a silent command to the universe. If you constantly imagine debt, struggle, or delay, the thinking substance obediently constructs situations that match those pictures. It is never personal. It is the law. That is why Wattles urged his students to see things as you want them to be, not as they are. Because the mind that clings to appearances keeps recreating appearances. Only vision, sustained, definite, emotional vision, can overrule the momentum of the past. Your outer life is a mirror of your dominant image. Change the picture, and reality begins to rearrange itself around it. Here is the practice of mastery, the art of definite vision. Withdraw from the chaos of appearances. Take time each day to enter silence, where the noise of circumstance cannot reach you. In that stillness, imagination becomes pure. Form a single vivid picture. Describe it in your mind until every detail feels real, the environment, the sensations, the gratitude of already having it. Emotion imprints the image onto the universal substance like fire on wax. Hold it with faith, not tension. Faith is a relaxed conviction, not a clenched will. The clearer and calmer your certainty, the faster the substance organizes itself. Refuse contradictory thoughts. Every time doubt arises, return to the picture and feel it again. Doubt is the only vibration strong enough to erase what faith has drawn. Act in harmony with the vision. Let your daily actions reflect the reality you've already accepted inwardly. The universe meets you halfway through circumstance, intuition, and timing. Wattles compared this process to an artist molding clay. Each thought is a touch of the hand. Each emotion adds shape. Gratitude fires the sculpture into permanence. Consider this. The richest person you can imagine, the inventor, the mystic, the builder of civilizations, they all used the same invisible tool you possess right now. Their outer achievements were simply reflections of inner constancy. The universe is not moved by your struggle, your education, or your lineage. It is moved by your image, clear, consistent, unwavering. Definiteness is destiny. When you choose a picture and refuse to let it go, the formless begins to crystallize around it. Events reorganize, people appear, coincidences align, because reality must obey the mind that knows what it wants. To live without a definite vision is to live as an echo. To hold one is to live as a creator. Wattles' quiet instruction still resounds. Think what you want, do not think of what you do not want. And that single command, practiced daily, has the power to alter the entire landscape of your life. In the next chapter, Faith, the Substance of Things Desired, we will explore the bridge between thought and manifestation, the mysterious force that turns imagination into form. For even the clearest vision cannot live without the energy of belief behind it. Vision is the map. Faith is the current that carries it into reality. Chapter 5. Faith, the Substance of Things Desired. There comes a moment in every creator's journey when the image is formed, the intention is clear, yet nothing has appeared. The mind wavers. Maybe it isn't working. Doubt creeps in like fog, covering the radiant picture once so alive. It is here in this sacred in-between that faith begins. Faith is not blind belief. It is spiritual eyesight, the vision that sees through delay into certainty. Wattles called it the substance of things desired. He meant it literally. Faith is the invisible material from which the visible is shaped. Where thought designs and imagination colors, faith provides the mass, the energetic density that pulls form out of the formless. Without it, even the clearest vision drifts like smoke. With it, mountains move, currents bend, and matter yields. Most people confuse faith with hope. Hope waits. Faith knows. Hope says, someday. Faith whispers, already. Wattles saw that the world suffers not from lack of opportunity, but from lack of conviction. Men and women pray for abundance while secretly expecting disappointment. They think two opposite thoughts at once, one of wealth, one of worry, and the universe, hearing both, delivers neither. He wrote, "To think faithlessly is to sever your connection with the source. You must know that the thing you desire is at this moment forming around you. That knowingness, quiet, unshakable, is what most have lost in an age that worships proof. We've been trained to believe only what we can touch, never realizing that touch itself is the echo of belief. The unseen must be believed before it can be seen. Think back to a time when you knew something good was coming. You didn't hope, you felt it. you spoke as if it were already true. And somehow, reality obeyed that tone of certainty. That vibration was faith. Not the ritual, not the prayer, the feeling underneath it. Every human carries a dial that tunes between fear and faith. Wherever the needle rests, reality begins to hum in harmony. Fear vibrates scarcity. Faith vibrates completion. The tragedy is that fear feels safer because it keeps us in control. Faith requires surrender, the letting go of how and when. But the moment you surrender, the law begins to work. The seed doesn't beg the soil for proof of germination. It simply trusts the process. That same law governs the seed of your desire. Faith is the atmosphere in which it germinates unseen. Wattles gave a simple yet revolutionary formula for faith in action. Speak the language of completion. Use present tense certainty. Not I will have wealth, but wealth now flows through me. Words are creative sound. Faith gives them life. Feel before you see. Spend moments each day entering the emotional reality of fulfillment. Feeling precedes form. Emotion is the magnetic field that attracts conditions. Detach from appearances. Do not let visible lack cancel invisible progress. The field rearranges itself beneath the surface long before the flower breaks ground. Act as the channel, not the beggar. Work, plan, give, and speak as one who already lives in supply. Actions taken in certainty multiply results. Actions taken in desperation scatter them. Sustain gratitude. Gratitude is the maintenance of faith. It tells the universe, I trust you, keep unfolding. Faith then is not belief without evidence. It is alignment before evidence. It's standing on unseen ground with the same confidence you have when standing on stone. When you hold that vibration long enough, the outer world has no choice but to conform. Imagine walking through life surrounded by an invisible orchestra playing a melody only you can hear. Everyone else listens for proof. You move to rhythm. That rhythm is faith, the song of what is becoming. Faith does not strain. It smiles before manifestation because it knows creation is already underway. It is the golden bridge between mind and matter, the pulse of God through human intention. Wattles called it the way of certainty. To live in certainty is to stop reacting to appearances and start directing them. Circumstances cease to intimidate you because you understand they are clay, malleable, obedient, temporary. Faith speaks once, then rests. And while it rests, the universe builds. So the next time fear tells you it isn't working, remember this law. What you believe with feeling is already forming in the invisible. Every doubt merely delays delivery. Every act of gratitude accelerates it. The spiritual man does not chase outcomes. He walks in outcomes unseen. In the next chapter, Gratitude, the Magnetic Key, we'll explore the emotion that keeps faith alive and abundance flowing. For gratitude is more than politeness. It is the resonance that locks you into the frequency of creation itself. If faith builds the bridge, gratitude lights the path across it. Chapter 6. Gratitude, the Magnetic Key. There is a sound that only the soul can make. It is not prayer. It is not petition. It is the quiet hum of gratitude, a vibration so high, so clear, that the universe cannot resist answering it. Wallace D. Wattles called gratitude the key that keeps you connected to the source of your supply. To him, gratitude wasn't sentiment, it was alignment. When you are grateful, you tune your inner instrument to the frequency of abundance. Everything in the universe moves toward harmony, and gratitude is the ultimate harmony between the Creator and the created, the song of acknowledgement that says, I know where my good comes from. Most people only feel grateful when things go right. They see gratitude as a reaction to gain. But metaphysically, gratitude is not the effect of abundance. It is the cause. Wattles wrote, The grateful mind is constantly fixed upon the best. Therefore it tends to become the best. He understood that a man can work day and night, yet if he complains, his vibration contracts and the flow of supply constricts. It is not punishment. It is physics. You cannot receive while broadcasting lack. Every word of resentment, every sigh of dissatisfaction sends a signal to the thinking substance that says, I do not yet have enough. And since the universe mirrors belief, it obeys, sending you more lack to match your conviction. Gratitude reverses that signal instantly. It declares, there is abundance now. And the law responds in kind, expanding the field around you. To live in gratitude is to stand in the vibration of completion, even when appearances suggest otherwise. That is faith matured into peace. Look within. How often have you postponed gratitude? We say, I'll be thankful when I get the promotion, when I meet the right person, when I finally have enough. But by waiting, we push the frequency of abundance further away. We send the universe a message of delay. Not yet. Gratitude now is the bridge between the unseen and the seen. It doesn't wait for proof. It creates proof. Try this experiment. Recall a time you were truly thankful, when joy welled up for no reason.
From me, the matriarch, I bid you guys farewell, and I'll see you again tomorrow. Same time, same place. Keep reading.